Blog Talk Radio.
I thank it for me.
Yes, I am.
Ring bang dana day. Dang dana day.
Check it.
A revolution. Yeah. I'm on site of revolution. A revolution, yeah. Rasta tight up that revolution, dang 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 dang.
Check it.
Some corporate people down for months and them a make big speech, but poor people the food not reach. I'm enough to wonder how them really sleep. Them living in the pool while the poor are feel the heat. Red country. Why it's red country. Why in the ghetto part of town you ain't nothing but a victim. We're just trapped in a political system. There ain't no one to tell it alone. If you hit the big man a gunshot, them broke your bone with stone. Why so a revolution, yeah. I'm on site a revolution coming in a Babylon. A revolution, yeah. A hot revolution. Ring bang da da ding, bang da da ding. Heads of government, what is your aim? Where is the plan? Where is the future for the younger generation? If there's no light at the end of the tunnel, well, young your stuff, I go red like hell. For man, the peas are cooked, but the rice can't well. For no more big speech, time to come action. Crime and the violence rampant in our nation. People say it's because of suffering, son. There's got to be a revolution, yeah. What a hot a revolution, wriggling in a Babylon land, yeah. A revolution, yeah. Guns, knives and cutlass revolution. Dang da da dang, dang da da bang. All you false leaders, I brand you as traitors. Nothing but whoremongers, idol worshippers, them assassins. Yo, you better come down off of your punk and try to pick in poor people for a joyride. Cause all you teach is to divide and rule, and I use the people then with your political tools, just fool. Sure, cause a revolution, yeah. If we're going to see the revolution, ring dang da da ding, dang da da ding. A revolution, yeah. What a hot a revolution, ding da dang da dang da dang. Da, no matter how them a come out and a kidnap them teeth, yet the poor man the food not reach. Tell them all to practice what they preach, cause I don't want to see them all a paging speech. Whoa, cause a revolution, yeah. I'm on sight of revolution. Ring dang da da dang da da. A revolution.
Greetings and welcome to the Chef Rob Show. I'm your host, Chef Rob, here at Blog Talk Radio. Tonight I want to talk to a sister from the WADU organization, the World African Diaspora Union. I want to hear her thoughts and views about what it is, what can it help, what can it do now, and what's the direction and where it is going. So I'm going to see the sister's called in. Let's see if that sister's just about ready. Hey, sister, how you doing?
I'm good, brother. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. You enjoying this weather here?
Yes, I am. I am enjoying the weather.
So nice this time.
Oh, at least it's not snowing.
So, sister.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Yes, I'm here. First, I want to say thank you for inviting me on, Rob, to get a chance to talk a little bit about WADU and also African Development Plan.
Right.
Where would you like me to start?
You know, why don't you just give a little bit of your background, you know, what you can give, let people know who you are, what you represent. Just go into what is WADU and what does that mean?
Okay. I call myself a concerned citizen. I am originally from Jamaica, a mother of four, and someone who has lived in many different parts of the country, you know, New York, Southwest Florida, Atlanta, Denver, and now Chicago. And why I say I'm a concerned citizen is because wherever I live, that's my community. And as my community, I'm usually concerned about what's going on, especially as it relates to the youth and education and, you know, what's happening to us, the violence, black against black, police brutality, things like that. So I've been an activist most of my adult life. And so, you know, there's a lot of other things to go with that, but I think that that's what's more important. I am here tonight as a concerned person and as a someone who has a vision. I call it that my ancestors called me a few years ago. I was in Denver, and I went to a poverty forum. And when I went to the poverty forum, this gentleman said that in the year 2050, the average income in America would be $90,000. In China and India, $45,000. And in Africa, $1,800. And the next sentence was, and Africa has the richest resources in the world. So the question that I asked was, if Africa has the richest resources in the world, why were the people of Africa doing so poorly? And as I looked around at the black communities that I've lived in different parts of the country, I see the same pattern. So I wanted to know if there was a correlation. So I'm also a researcher. I call myself a historian. I'm an activist. So as an activist, I like to understand root cause. You know, what is it that causes the conditions in our community? And if so, what is the solution? So I'm a solutions-oriented person. So how does that lead up to WADU? Out of this vision and what I was seeing in the different communities that I've worked in, including as an education activist, where I saw a great disparity between black and white educational achievement. And a lot of times, by the time you look at it, there were deliberate things within the system to block our achievement, you know? So when the ancestors called me and I started researching Africa, I was, like, amazed at what I was finding out. And so talking to Africans in Denver and talking to Africans in different parts of the country, what I was seeing was that within the African-American community, there was another community. There are many different – we're going to use a term called diaspora, and many people – let me explain what diaspora means. Diaspora are those who are outside of wherever their original homeland is. So for myself as an African – consider myself an African-American, but I am from Jamaica, so I'm from the Caribbean. So you would have, as the African diaspora, you would have African-Americans, African-Caribbeans, African-Latinos. Those are people coming from South and Central America. And then Africans from the continent, continental Africans. But the bottom line is we're all African people. So I began to see patterns in how we as black people are treated worldwide. There is no country in the world, including in parts of Africa, that you can go to, that you can say that we are doing well. And when I say well, compared to how you would go to a U.S. city or to a European country and see a standard of living for the mass of the people at a certain level. You don't really see that for us as black people. And so there's, you know, I wanted to know why. And in discovering why, I began to look at our history, not only prior to slavery, but when our people were captured and enslaved, and then through colonialism and through many things that have happened here in America, which I feel, as I study, that, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding of history, you know, and so we will have something like the 13th Amendment to our Constitution here, which will say that slavery was abolished, and word number 6 will say except if you are incarcerated. And then when you look at the high incarceration of black people, you begin to see how it ties in. So we have a history of many laws and rules and civil rights being passed, but when you look at the actual implementation, what you're seeing is that people have found ways to circumvent the law. And so hence, we're at a critical stage right now in our existence on this planet. You know, when you look at black people, how they're doing, when you look at just Chicago with about a 30% black unemployment rate, and it's probably higher. That's like the general population, but it's really higher than that when you look at over a 70% youth unemployment rate. When you go to parts of Africa, you see the same thing. South Africa has a 30% African unemployment rate. It has a 5% white unemployment rate, you know. You see a 70% youth unemployment rate. If you go to many parts of the world, you see the same trends. So as black people, we're still living that legacy, and that legacy that has come over from slavery and the legacy that come over from colonialism. Because even though there are 55 African countries now, the reality is many of them are really not free. You know, they claim independence, but when you look at their economies, when you look at the standard of living, when you look at how in the year 2015 Africa is going to have 50% of the world's poor, and yet in 1990 Africa had 20% of the world's poor, then something is terribly wrong. So that's a little bit of how I came to this journey.
Okay, that's deep. How long has WADU been around? What does WADU stand for once again?
WADU stands for World African Diaspora Union. Okay, so it's African people in the diaspora forming a union. So World African Diaspora Union. It's actually a Bantu word meaning feastly gathering. So WADU has been around since 2007 officially, but its members and its leaders have been around a long time. These are gentlemen and women who have fought in the Pan-African movement ever since they were younger. You know, we have Baba James Smith and Leonard Jeffries, and here in Chicago, we have, you know, you have people like Elambi Brath and Minister Menelik, and you have Baba Thompson here in Chicago. So you've had people who have been involved in the struggle for African freedom. And when the African Union was formed in 2002, and they watched for a few years and they felt that certain things were not happening as far as how the continent was being run. And so they were concerned, and so they came together and they brought together many different Pan-African groups. And so WADU is like an umbrella, you know, and what they're trying to do is to really have people focus on a new global order where African people unite, where we look at what's happening on the continent and we unite around issues of unity and the fact that you're having a recolonization of the continent, you know. So we have certain principles, and principle number one is the unification of Africa with one central government, and that's how we see the African Union. Being that governmental body. We're looking at the official acceptance of the diaspora as a sixth region of the African Union, and that is actually so. You know, Africa has five regions, and they have made the diaspora, that is the rest of us around the world, the sixth region. And that sixth region at some point is going to have some representation, 20 seats on the African Union. And at that time, right now we have two appointed people from the diaspora, and they're not from North America. One is from Costa Rica, and I think the other one's from Trinidad. And so in time, we're going to have some more representation. And another principle is we are opposing an eradication of racism and imperialism and neocolonialism. With neocolonialism, what we're really saying is that even though African countries, many of them have 50 years so-called independence, when you look at their economies, when you look at what is going on, when you look at the poverty of the people, when you look at the violence, you know, the amount of wars, within civil wars that are happening on the continent, the colonialism isn't over. You know, when you look at France coming into Mali right now, France went into Syria to Ivory Coast. When you look at what happened to Libya, you know. So Africa is not independent, not when you look at all of the NATO involvement and U.S. involvement, and this involvement is not for the benefit of the people. It's been 50-something years, you know. It took 4 years. It took 2 years, actually, for them to rebuild Europe after World War II, and yet look how long Africa has been going on, and we still haven't got it together. So
what is a Pan-Africanist?
Pan-Africanist is someone who is concerned with the struggle for the liberation of the continent and the freedom. Initially, it was about independence for all the African countries. So people had gathered around, especially in the fight for South Africa. And in 1994, South Africa, allegedly gained her independence. And that was the struggle, you know, to be free, to be independent, and to have control of our own lives, you know.
Hey, okay, real briefly, do you know who, which U.S. congressman or black business or black entertainer or anybody of that nature is supportive of Pan-Africanists or Wadu?
You look at someone like Harry Belafonte. I couldn't tell you the name off the top of my head with the congressman and stuff. Sorry about that. But we have a number of elders who are in the community, you know. We had, like I said, Dr. Leonard Jeffries, Dorothy Lewis, James Small, Nana Falaika, who's coming out of D.C. We had Dr. Joyce King, Dr. Shelby Lewis, Minister Atwar Muhammad, Dr. Malefi Asante, Joe Beasley, you know, Rosinda Hiru. These were John Watusi Branch in New York, Anderson Thompson here, Minister Menelik, Julius Garvey, Marcus Garvey's son. These are all people who are founding members of WADU. So WADU was really like an umbrella where people from these different organizations came together under the common principles that we were working towards the unification of Africa. Now, in order for us to work towards the unification of Africa and to have a sixth region, we have to also work towards the unification of the diaspora. So WADU's focus is in the diaspora, trying to bring us together under that umbrella, so that when we go to the African Union, we can speak with one voice at least about certain basic things.
Okay. As far as the membership is concerned, which world leaders are more supportive of WADU?
Pardon me?
Which world leaders, which world leaders, which African presidents or leaders are on board with WADU?
I can't give you names. I'm sorry I don't have that information. But what we do have is support from the African Union. WADU is recognized by the African Union, and our representatives are actually there right now. They're having a conference coming up next week. So we should be discussing the 50th anniversary of OAU. So as to give you specific names, I can't do that. But Madame, the chairman of the African Union, Madame Zuma, is very aware of us and the work that we've been doing. Last May in Sandton, South Africa, a number of our representatives, along with other diaspora people from around the world, were in South Africa, and they had a diaspora summit. And at that summit, the African Union asked for certain things, which they called the legacy projects. And the legacy projects, what they were asking for, was for a production of a skills database of African professionals. Africa has a number of developmental challenges, and so in order to address them, they're looking to us in the diaspora who do have a little bit more highly, more skills, you know, probably more higher education training. And so they're looking to create a skills database so that they can then begin to tie in some of those people to some of the challenges that Africa has. So to as a body, the African Union is in support of us, and we are one of those groups that they have recognized, and that was through some of the work of our former leader who passed last year, almost a year to now. That was Dr. Dudley Thompson from Jamaica, Ambassador Dudley Thompson. So the African Legacy Project is also asking for an African Diaspora Volunteer Corps, because they need people to come over and do certain things, you know. And they want to have an African Diaspora Investment Fund, and they're looking at a marketplace for the diaspora to facilitate innovation and entrepreneurship. So part of what we're doing as WADU is actually recruiting people who have businesses already, who can, you know, get in and get it up and going and have business plans and propositions but would like to do some work in Africa. And so we have some connections with some people here who actually go and take people to Africa, you know, to do that connecting. Not people who have an idea, but people who can actually do something. You know, that's what they're looking for. People who can get there, have the capital, and get up and go. And then they're also looking at a remittance institute because the Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, the Africans who are here send home a lot of money. And so now they're realizing how much money is sent home, a couple billion, and they're looking at, well, how can we use that remittance that comes in as a leverage, you know, towards our developmental needs? So those are the things that came out of the African Diaspora Legacy Projects. Again, the diaspora is not just us as African-American or African-Caribbean, but also Afro-Latinos and continental Africans who now make the U.S. or North America or the Western, you know, the diaspora their home.
A question comes from the chat room. It's, are there stable countries to build in? Which country do you think we can go ahead and work with first?
We have some people doing some work in Ghana. We're looking at Ethiopia. We're looking at Tanzania. Some people are doing some work in South Africa. So there are a number of places that, you know, people could recommend and that the lady who we would recommend you to has connections with, you know?
How are we going to go ahead and make this connection to go ahead and build that bridge to go over there? Because you got a lot of people over here saying they ain't got no business going over there. Just stay home.
Yeah, and I can understand that, you know.
Because what I'm saying is, you know, is there, how do you go ahead and show people that there's a sense of urgency, or should we go ahead and act or not?
That there's a sense of urgency. Well, the sense of urgency is, here's how I see it. The diaspora, as far as African people, African people are suffering worldwide, okay? And yes, some people, we have to take care of home first, okay, before sometimes we can take care of other places. And so for me, part of the work for the diaspora is actually unity, getting to know each other, getting to care about each other, getting to see that we have a common history and that some of the issues that affect us are because we're Black people in the world. So it's not just about going to Africa. If you have the capacity to do that and you would like to do that, then we can help to facilitate that. But we're also talking about building unity here in the West, you know, and wherever we are. When I look around at my community here in Chicago, there are a number of things that we need to work on. So how do we come together as people of African descent to work on the issues of, say, education or the issues of health or the issue of the violence, you know, how many people have died and they're predominantly Black, and begin to have some political empowerment? Why is that important? Because not only will political empowerment help you in your community to have more say and to have some power or to have some access to power, which can then improve the lives of the people in the community. But as it relates to Africa, you know, what is U.S. foreign policy towards Africa when it comes to trade or different issues? You know, in Wadu here in Illinois, we're a new branch, so it's only been like 2-3 months that we've actively started meeting here. And so what we'll be doing is organizing committees. These committees will be beginning to do some research, right, to find out what are some of the issues that affect us here as Black people, what are the issues that affect us here as it relates to U.S. foreign policy, et cetera, and we'll be looking at how to remove the agenda. Part of what WADU is also about culture, and many people, you know, every August we have a big African festival here. We have the Dusabo Museum. We have a few exhibits at some museums that have African, you know, Egypt or African exhibitions, but sometimes people don't even connect Egypt with Africa, you know? So there's a lot of things that we're going to be doing as far as being a place where you can have a forum where we can talk about issues, we can talk about this unity. There was a study that I had read that talked about how African-Americans, Africans, and Caribbean people felt about each other. And the overall trend was there was a lot of distrust, you know? And so starting on a simplistic level, we're going to be talking about unity, why we need to come together, because when someone sees any of us walking down the street, that's just a Black man in America or a Black woman in America. So the fact that we don't consider ourselves the same thing is a problem, because when other people look at us, they see a Black person, you know? So we're talking about uniting the diaspora, and we're calling for representation at the AU. And in order for us to have representation that truly represents the people, not just opportunists, then the people need to come together. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to bring the people together, and whether you call yourself a Pan-African or not, we are people of African descent, and we are people who suffer from the same history, and some of our history is quite great, but we've had a rough spell the last 500 years. But when you begin to study our history, you see that we come from a long line of a very positive people who have accomplished great things, and we are quite capable of accomplishing them now and into the future. So part of what I'm trying to do is to, first, like I said, build those friendships. You know, what are the African and Caribbean and Latino, Afro-Latino organizations out there? How do we get maybe a council formed where we could have some representation? We begin to know what each other is doing. We can begin to support each other. And even if people just begin to go out to people's events and understand more about each other and build that relationship, cross that bridge, that is one step in the right direction, you know? Then once we get that one step in the right direction, then we're going to begin to focus on, well, what are the issues that are affecting us here right now? Most of the children who go to our schools don't learn anything about our history. That's a major problem, you know, and that shouldn't be so, because I've been told over 12 years now they've had laws passed that talk about having an African, more African history, et cetera, in the curriculum, yet it's not been enforced. Well, it's time for us to begin to have a more African-centered curriculum, because 45% of the school district is children of African descent, and children need to know their history so they can have a strong sense of self and self-esteem. Plus, when you don't have children learning about us as African people and the things that happened to us, you're actually leaving out a part of world history. We are a part of world history. So just for history to become, you know, complete, then there needs to be more acknowledgement of the role of the African, you know, whether they be in a
Not sure what happened.
I got cut off.
Yeah, a lot of this got cut off here. Let me run with something real quick, and we'll come on back to you. It's Brother Ben Holden. I want to go ahead and let him chime in. But I want you to think about this question while I go ahead and play a quick clip. I always got to play my favorite individual. So I'm going to play him early. I usually play him later. But the question is the Chicago youth, you're working in Chicago, what's the plan to deal with the Chicago youth, because it's like you said, it's like a 30% unemployment rate, which we both feel that it's a lot higher.
It's 70% for the youth. It's more than that for the youth. It's over 70% for the youth.
Yeah. So okay. So what's the plan to go ahead and deal with that? I want you to hold off on that because I'm going to go ahead now. Play something real quick, but I want to see, you know, I think we can build a whole industry around going in and just educating the youth. So listen to my buddy.
Okay.
No, I've often said that thank God for slavery, because, you know, had not, then the blacks who are here would have been stuck in Africa. And you see how bad Africa, everybody and mama trying to get out of Africa and come to America. And so God has a way of looking out for folks, and he made it possible by way of slavery to get black folks into this country. But 100% American. Proud of it. I thank God that he saw fit for me to get here. Never mind that. You know, we were sold, my ancestor way back, way yonder when, were sold by Arabs and blacks to white folks and got us here. The white man came and brought us to the greatest country in the world. The ride over was pretty tough, but, you know, it's like riding on a crowded airplane and when you're not in first class. It's a tough ride. But you're happy when you get to your destination. And so the ride was tough over here. The pain for freedom was tough, you know, because in life, if you want to gain something, you got to lose something. No pain, no gain. So it was a tough, the pain was tough, all for the sake of freedom. So I thank God that he got me here, and to show my appreciation to the blacks who suffer as a result of coming here, and the Arabs and blacks who sold us to the white man, the white man for going there and getting us and bringing us here, I want to say thanks.
Yep. We always got to listen to that. That's a great motivational speaker there. Hey, sister, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here, and I'm like, are you for real? Oh, good Lord.
He's a great motivational speaker. You know, I asked you a question about how to deal with the youth, right?
Yeah.
And so, go ahead, catch your breath, sister. Catch your breath.
Y'all have to catch my breath after that. Oh, Lord. Okay. Go on.
I got to play him every show. I'm telling you, he's a great motivational speaker.
No, yeah. You don't need to upset the people like that, man.
But you know, one thing about the youth, right? Like I said, I think we can build a whole industry around just educating the youth. And I've been told that by a few people, and I totally 100% agree with it. So at this point in time, you know, this didn't just happen overnight. You know, who should we hold accountable for this? Should we just go ahead and deal with ourselves, or should we go ahead and politicians, movie stars, actors? Well, you know, who should we go ahead and deal with? Just the average Joe on the street? Do we go ahead and confront them, or we just go ahead and do our own thing?
Well, I think that all of us have to share in the blame, and therefore all of us have to share in the solutions that are needed as it relates to our youth. You know, whenever I hear people talking badly about youth, I get really annoyed because these children didn't jump out of our wombs big, okay? So therefore they were small and somebody trained them to be who they are. So therefore, if you're not happy with the behavior of the youth, then you need to do something about it. And doing something about it doesn't mean castigating them and belittling them, and every chance you get, you got something bad to say about them. How about you help them? You know, how about you ask them their opinion? How about you have them help to share in coming up with solutions? Because children, I have found, I have four, and I haven't had I've done coaching and counseling with kids, and I've worked in youth movements a long time. You know, I had a girls' group and all of that, and I haven't found a dumb kid yet. Okay, they may make bad choices because of how they are brought up sometimes, and sometimes the lack of opportunity. However, most kids that I speak to want an opportunity to rise and shine, want an opportunity to do the right thing. And so I really feel that in this diaspora quest that we have here, that our focus should be the youth. I think that that would make an excellent point of organizing, you know. So when you look at what's going on with the school system right now, we should be looking at how do we identify skills assessment and training, you know, agencies that can help the youth get high school diplomas. A number of them drop out of school early. You know, I was always amazed when I used to counsel kids how they would tell me that, I can't wait till I'm 16, I want to drop out of school. And I said, you know, how come you managed to hear that, right? You singing on dropping out of school, but you didn't know that that same person who's telling you you can drop out is supposed to also be offering you some guidance, okay?
Mm.
And they're supposed to be offering you resources based on wherever you are at, okay? But instead, you know, they frustrate you, and all you're looking for is to get out. And I say, when you get out, what's going to happen to you? If you don't have an education, it means that the types of jobs, if you can get a job, are going to be slim. So you're going to end up doing something that you wouldn't normally do because everybody needs to survive. Okay? And so then you're going to end up in jail. Then they're going to take your most productive years and lock you up and train you to be a criminal. That's what they're going to do. So since we know that this is the plan, how do we circumvent that, right? How do we change that? You control your destiny. It takes five things to make a child successful. The child needs to know that he can do it, okay, and want it. His parent needs to create a supporting environment that will foster that. So if there's a problem, first you have to have a place for the child to do their homework, get rest, eat well, all of these things, you know. And then if there's a problem, be able to stand up for your child. then you need a school system that's supportive. But you can't expect to send a child, and you didn't do what you're supposed to do, and the child isn't ready, and expect them to learn very much. Then from the school system, you need a community, and a community needs to be supportive and value education, okay, and value safety and love its kids. And I'm not really feeling that here in Chicago, okay? I'm not feeling it when 506 people can die, and I don't see anybody on the radio or the TV doing no whole heap of crying over that. But when other people get shot, you know, there's a whole heap of crying, and there's a whole heap of, and I'm not saying that these events were not tragic, but I think 506 people dying in Chicago is quite tragic, because 2,000-something got shot from those 506 to die, okay? And so we need a better agenda. And then when it comes to our young people, I've been at a gas station and filling up the car, and I look across the road, and the cops, you know, see some young black boys walking, and they stop them, and before you look, they're searching them. They got their hands all up in their pants. But, you know, I'm like, come on now. Not only are they invading them, their person. I mean, that repels me so, okay? Now, these people should not be allowed to do this to our children. And this is why the children are acting out, because you humiliate them, okay? You're breaking them down. And then when the anger comes up out of them, because it's natural to be angry at something like that, who do they take it out on? They take it out on the rest of us in the community, because we have failed to protect them. So I believe that as an organizing tool, organizing around the youth is what we need to do, because if we don't have any youth, we won't have any future. So for those who don't get that, if we have no young people, we have no future. Okay? So we need to put some emphasis on saving them. And once you start talking to them, you'll find them to be quite nice. I've not met a young person yet who didn't like speaking to me or to wanting closer relationships with adults, contrary to popular belief, you know, and actually want to care. So I would like to see skills assessment and training done, you know, apprenticeship programs brought back. There were schools that used to offer trades, you know, and the young people needed that. And then now when they get incarcerated, all of those programs have even been cut in the jails. So when they go there, it's like a holding pen, right? And you have time to learn things that you really didn't need to learn, but you learned them now that you're there because you ain't got nothing else to do. So there is a deliberate attempt to keep us at a very low standard, so that when we come out and you come out of jail, then it's like a revolving door, right? You can't handle out here. You can't, you know, you have a big red X on your forehead almost. You can't get no jobs. You can't get this. You can't get housing. You can't get a lot of things. You can't get no education. And so, look, the brothers end up back in jail. I'm saying if they have committed a crime and they pay their time, when they come out, they need to be returned to us as citizens with all rights, and we need to welcome them and help them. So I'm thinking that when it comes to the youth, those who have criminal records, we should be looking at how do we set up a system where we could help them expunge their records, you know? How do we get a transition program, more transition programs for ex-offenders, right? And where are some of these people coming back to, and which communities are they, you know, sending a disproportionate number of them to? Is that why we see certain crime, certain areas are very high with the crime, you know? We need to be identifying more youth groups and centers. In Inglewood, you don't have any real youth centers, okay? So here's a place where you've had over 100 and something of the 506 people have gotten shot. They came out of Inglewood. And yet you see a cut in the safety net program. You see a cut in programs to the youth that are there. And you're going to tell me that you really care about the young people? You know, you see the police force regearing and talking about how it's going to come in and take over. Take over what? You know, this is a community. You're here to serve and protect. Could you serve and help us protect the people of the community? But better yet, could we have some intervention so that we can deal with our children effectively, you know? So I think that we need to have campaigns where, you know, put some of these young people up on billboards, you know? So when they walk into the neighborhood, instead of seeing alcohol or other things, they see themselves. They begin to identify and feel positive about themselves. So I really feel that, Chef Rob, that's where my focus is, you know, on the future, and the future is the youth.
Thank you. So let me get the 720690. Your line is open. State your name, where you're calling from.
What's up, Chef Rob? This is Brother Commit in Denver.
How you feeling, brother? Greetings to the sacred.
hook up to the sister as well.
Okay. You have a question, Tommy, brother?
You know, I'm from that area. I'm from Joliet. And it's just interesting that after all this time of struggle, the centuries we've been here, we still don't have any viable institutions that are independent. And as a person who studies a lot and who works a lot in the community and who's actually owned a bookstore and I still sell books, it is very difficult to even become a teacher for our children in our own interest. It seems like everywhere you go, no one has our back and no one has the protection that allows us to do what we need to do with our children.
Yeah.
And I would definitely be on board and, you know, willing to work toward improving that. The few African-centered schools we've had here in Colorado, they're always weak, and there's always some multicultural bent to it that really just totally undermines the whole point. So I'm still struggling with those issues, and I think that the diaspora work would be much more viable if we could have a secure facility institution that really didn't compromise and allow anyone to dictate what we do. Now, I know on the East Coast there are a few places that I think are doing the correct thing and have been for years, but I haven't seen it able to be reproduced anywhere else. And part of that, I think, is we've been raised in the European school system ourselves, so many of us just don't have the ability to get past that brainwash.
Yes, let me Supreme, your line is open.
Highly peace, brother chef, and highly peace to the great Cecil Johnson, Queen. I was just gonna say, are you saying that we can, you know, it says here that you wanna try and get us in? I don't think that. Do you think that politics can work for black folk, whether it be in the United States or be in Africa? I mean, true righteousness in Africa can go on politically.
Sister?
I'm not sure. He said it, he was asking a question if true righteousness could go on in Africa. And what was the other part of the question?
This is a two-part. Uh-huh. I'm going to ask you one question and you can answer that one rather than me giving you two questions to answer. I was saying, do you think that do you think that politics can work for black folk in the United States? I mean, I'm from the UK. I don't think it can work in the UK. And I don't know how long, if you've been to the UK and seen how black folk live in the UK or how we are. But, I mean, do you think that politics can work in the United States, you know?
I think that we have no choice but to participate in part of the process. But what I'm seeing is that we're not trained properly. You know, I used to work for a political leadership training organization, a progressive leadership organization, and I saw us take people and train them on you know, vision and values and fundraising and communicating and how to collaborate. And those are skills that you can teach somebody, you know? So when you ask, do I think politics can work? I think it can. Right now, we have a whole bunch of crackerjacks. They may look like us, but they're not really representing us. They're going along with the program. And so whatever, you know, for lack of a better word, master say, that's what they do. Why do I know that? Look at the state of our community, okay? A lot of times things are happening in community. These fellas are supposed to tell us about funding and all of that. We pay taxes, too, so therefore we should participate, okay? And not only that, our ancestors done paid for all of this. So I'm not coming here to talk about a handout, but I'm saying just as every other group has some political input, you know, or some economic, what we've seen happen in the black community is we don't have any economic power and we don't have any political power, notwithstanding having a black man in the White House and some black people here in our Senate and, you know, local offices. You know, look at the state of the place. That's how you know if we really have any representation. So if we had representation, we would have good schools in Chicago. We have an 85% minority school system. 45% is black, okay? Shame on us that after all this time, we still can't get the kids some good education. When it comes to black and healthcare, the same thing. When you look at every data, HIV, AIDS, when you look at health, when you look at, you know, how long we live, when you look at infant mortality, it's 5% for whites, it's 13% for blacks. When you look at women dying, giving birth, you know, it's a 3-to-1 margin, it's 11% for whites, it's 34% for blacks. So come on now, you know. If they can do it for one group, they can do it for us. And yes, sir, we have to become political. We can't escape it. This is a political system.
Okay, and if we was educated, I mean, the devil's history is written in blood. I mean, historically, and if you look at all countries that were, or empires that was in control, they all declined, you know, when they were at their top. And I thought America has already been at their top, and now they're going down. What level are you saying that our political vote, with the black American only being 20% of the population of the United States, are you talking about state or national?
Well, I think that we don't live in all parts of the country. I mean, you have a scattering of blacks in a few areas, but there are main areas, you know, Illinois. You know, when you look at the East Coast, when you look at out in California, there are certain states, if you pull up some of the census data, you'll see where we're located. So we're not all over the place, but we are in certain places in significant numbers, especially in the South. So what I'm talking about is in whatever community that you are in, begin to get involved. You know, it's as simple as just being involved with what's going on with your child. You know, if in Chicago, we have an overabundance of cameras in the black community that are allegedly supposed to be there for our safety. But in reality, the place is still not safe. But when you go to the white community, you don't see that. So there's a lot of things that are happening to us that we have allowed to happen, that other people don't allow to happen to them, okay? And so when I say we need to become involved more politically, political is not just running for office. Politically is being an advocate for certain issues, whatever it is, whether it be the, you know, the gap between white and black unemployment, or the gap between children's achievement scores, or all of these things. They're just different things. Right? It could be health. It could be environment. In Inglewood, we have issues with lead, you know. So when I say political, I'm saying begin to become involved in your community. Know what's going on. Take an issue and support it. You know, become educated about it and support it. And it starts simply from there. Once you begin to understand that you do have power, you do have power, right? Your one vote does count. Because if it's one vote that the person lost the election by, you see how important that one vote is. So your vote does count. But even before you get to the vote, have a say in who is the person you're voting for, you know? So don't just wait till election time. Become involved.
When you're talking about Africa, do you think even Africa can be turned around politically as well? I mean...
Yes, I think so. I think so. And it's going to take the diaspora as well as the people on the continent. I spent the summer in South Africa last year, and I was blessed to have spent time at... I actually presented before the Thabo Mbeki African Leadership Institute. I met a number of the young people and others who went there, and they're actually learning about, they're not really learning political leadership training, but they are learning about the African Union, the history of Africa, and they're putting it in the context. And I'm hoping to see their program grow to a point where it also includes more political leadership training. So, yes, I believe that in Africa, if the people were given an opportunity, that, yes, they could have better leadership. But right now, that's not so. If you're a progressive leader and you get elected, you notice what happens to them, right? You've seen our history in the last 50 years. You either get deposed, you get assassinated, or something else. So people can't really honestly say that Africa is so dysfunctional when the West has been forever getting involved and assassinating or deposing our leaders, you know?
Well,
similar to some of the things that have happened here.
That's yeah? The thing. I mean... So, for example, if you was running for candidacy in the United States, I mean, you would have to do things for the devil, and that would mean integration. I mean, go on, sister.
You keep mentioning the devil and integration.
I mean,
here's the thing.
I mean, white people. I mean, that's what I refer to them as, the devil. Their history is written in the blood. I don't really want to debate with you, sister, about me. I just say that the white man's the devil. Their history is written in blood, sister. That's all.
Okay.
I mean, you don't have to refer to them like that, but I like to always keep it in my mind who I'm dealing with every day.
I hear what you're saying, and when I look at our history, it is a very tragic history, and it's quite clear to me who has been a major role in this history. However, we also have to, you know, we're in the year 2012, and I feel that, you know, even in the civil rights and the integration, it has not really benefited us much, in the sense that when I look at the state of our communities, we have lost all the economic power in the communities. Everyone can come off the boat, set up business in our communities, and do better than we do. So the question one has to ask is, did it benefit us in a way that we felt that, you know, would have been beneficial to us? You know, our children now don't know their history. Our children used to have business at times. So on one hand, you know, we had a civil rights movement, and you had alleged integration of schools. But when you look in Chicago, 85% of the students are minorities. So what happened? The whites left the school system. So they left the school system, okay? So they were obviously saying we're not into integration because they left. And then when you see, you go to a white school in the suburbs, the children are getting an education, but yet the same school system in the cities, in inner cities that are predominantly minority, we're not getting an education. And part of that is because we're also being miseducated, because some of the people who are here to teach us aren't really, you know, that wasn't the agenda, you know, so nothing really changed. Now, I blame us for some of that, because there are enough black people, and we've gone through too much to not know what a good education is and what the value of that is, okay? We've gone through too much. So I blame some of that on ourselves. There comes a point when we have to understand what we're up against, okay, and we need to fight it strategically. And part of that means that we must believe that we can. It means that we must unite. It means that we must understand what the common enemy is, and that we must then fight it. And as it relates to our children, you know, the children need to be protected. Who can deny you the right to protect your children, you know? So I really feel that youth should be the focus of our empowerment and our coming together, because who can deny you the right to want to protect your children?
I mean, I feel that a lot of the organizations, or so-called conscious organizations in the United States, which is so much divided. I mean, you've got, as well as having the main religions of Orthodox Muslims, you got your Muslims, you got your Christians, you got your Catholics, and then we've got the American Moorish temples. We got the you got Nation of Islam. You've got Nubians. You know, you got Hebrew Israelites. There's just so many denominations, and it's just keeping us even more divided. What do you think they, you know, do you think we have to get straight our spirituality before we could come together? Do you think that's something that we need to do?
Well, I don't think we should put up a thing that says, a clause that says we cannot save ourselves before we do this or before we do that. I think we need to actively work on saving ourselves. Now, I agree with you that there are points of dissension when it comes to religion. So, therefore, I would not focus on that. I would focus on the points of when we collaborate on the issues that we can join together on. When we look at the state of the black community, that's something we could join together on. When you look at the state of education, when you look at crime, when you look at incarceration, when you look at health, you know, when you look at no trauma unit on the south side, there are so many things that we could collaborate against. Who is your God is your personal business. You know, don't come and push it on me. So therefore, if we know that religion is going to be a point that people are going to argue about, then let's leave that off the table. Let us learn how to collaborate based on a common vision and a common issue. When a person bops you upside your head, they didn't ask you what your religion was. You know what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying, sis. I was just saying your opinion. Do you feel that these denominations, these different religious denominations, is one of the main reasons, as well as the education, not getting the right education, the right knowledge, as the main reasons, factors why we don't come together and, you know, as one? as one people.
Yeah, I really think that the religious part is a major part of the problem, you know, because religion has been used to divide us, and that was why they sent missionaries to Africa, and that's why under Islam, same thing, you know. I'm not saying that they're not good parts of you know, Christianity or, you know, some of the core beliefs, et cetera, but I'm talking about how a religion was used to subjugate people. So much so now that a lot of people, when they think of God, they think of God as white. You know, in 1920, when Marcus Garvey had his forum in New York, and he gathered over 25,000 people at Madison Square Garden, you know, in a time when he had no fax machine, no phone and all of that, he was able to gather 25,000 people from five continents around the world to come together for 1 month to talk about the state of black people in the world. Okay, and Marcus Garvey was smart enough to understand that he wasn't going to make that. He said that the God of the black man was the God of ours was black, right? And that was the bottom line. He wasn't getting into all the other things, and that's something core, you know. For you to believe in something and that something doesn't resemble yourself, automatically puts you in an inferior position. So I'm not going to.
Bobby, you know, hold on, Bob. Hold on. Let me introduce another brother here real quick. 708. 473, your line is open. Who is this again?
This is Brother Fakan. Brother Rob, how you doing?
How you doing, brother? How you doing, Brother Fakan? How you feel?
Good.
With the
you
black man. How you doing, brother? You got any? You want to chime in on this discussion real quick?
Yeah, I'm going to let the brother finish. I think he was in the middle of saying something. Let the brother finish his statement, and then we can go on from there.
Go ahead, brother.
Do you think that, I mean, even if we, you know, I don't think that personally, and I want you to say why it can, and, you know, go against what I'm about to say now, my statement, just if you've got something for my statement, something more positive to come out of the statement I'm going to make. I mean, with America, the blacks in America being only 20% of the nation, right, I don't think that your vote would be mean anything anyway. Because even if you all went the same way, I mean, I don't think that's enough numbers to have any political power, because you're the minority in the country. It's like black folk in the UK, where I am, we're only 2% of this whole of the whole of Britain. We don't have, even if the most educated, even if we had political nous and we understand politics, we would always have to, for me now to be in the political circuit, I have to now adhere to the people. Do you understand? And if I were to go into power on that, everything, for me to go into politics, I have to integrate. There's no other choice but for me to integrate, and the same things that I'm giving to my people, I have to give to everyone else. Do you see what I'm trying to say? Rather than me trying to lift us out of the position that we're in, at least if for instance, if I gave black folk real education, right, of themselves, the devil will see it. He knows that if we had real education and stuff, like when you guys were segregated from the devil, you guys were doing much better than the devil, and you lot was on equal footings. 5 more years, if you kept on staying segregated for another 5 more years, you guys would have been running that country. You lot would have had the power. It wouldn't even have mattered your numbers. You understand?
Yeah, we get that.
Yeah, that's you know, it's sort of like the whole Obama issue that we're looking at. You know, when Obama first ran for president, it was those of us, of our people, many of our people just went into, you know, hysteria, like, oh, man, we're going to have a black president. We're going to have a black president. He's our man. He was our man, you know, for that whole duration of him running. He was our man. He was the black president. No sooner as he gets into office, you hear our language change. He's no longer the black president. He's no longer our man. He became Well, you know, brother, he can't do just five people. He has to do for everybody. You know, the language changed. Now we have to incorporate everybody. So that in the beginning we had sort of a nationalistic type of tune that, okay, well, he's in office. Maybe we got a chance now. We can start to get something rolling on the ball because, you know, the most powerful man in the world is one of us, and he could get us going, you know. But we switched from that type of thinking to, well, you know, Congress is in control of this, and he can't really do everything. Well, man, look at him. They're beating him down, and he can only do so much because, again, he has to do something for the Mexicans and the Irish and the Chinese. He has to do something for everybody in America. He just can't do it for us. Our whole sphere of thinking changed. But the point that the brother is making has been a crucial point that a lot of us have been making, because if you look at the historical significance, whether it's during the Civil Rights era and what we've been through from the time of Dr. King, from the time of Right Excellent Marcus Mosiah Garvey, from the time of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm X, Huey Newton and the Black Panther Party, all these different developments that we didn't had, we understood that, yes, you know, A, we don't have power. That's number one that we understood. And we understood that we had to have some type of body politic that could represent us as a people in order to get such power. However, if you pay attention to one of the things that has been noted on our journey into these stages, we've always looked at the United Nations. How can we have representation at the United Nations? Well, if you look at the United Nations supposedly is supposed to be a group of different countries that sit together. You know, each country allegedly has their own power. You know, they're there to trade with each other. They're there to share with each other. They're there to do all the things that countries do with each other. However, for us to have representation in the United Nations, you would have to say that we have a nation. We have a power base. We have an economic base. And we lose that idea when we talk about self-determination. We don't have the defining moment. And so how do we gain for us to have economic power when we say we want economic power, but then we turn around and when we mean economic power, we mean get more of the United States money? You see, so in actuality, we're not talking about liberation. We're not talking about freedom. We're not talking about self-determination. We're talking about getting a bigger piece of the pie, you know, because how can you have economic freedom with your oppressor's currency and not your own? It doesn't exist. It cannot exist because they're in power. They have the power over that currency. And so for the brother on the line, when he's talking about, you know, your vote means nothing, the vote doesn't count, you know, which the Moors are going to a nice conversation with you, and many of us who also study as it relates to citizenship in this country. Let it be told by the consciousness of us and those of us who are wise to this particular country, we're really not citizens of America. And so if we negate the realities of who we are to this country, negate that reality and then try to integrate a non-existing reality, then we continue to fool ourselves. Now, the sister mentioned earlier that, yeah, we need to do something and we have to work with the powers that be and all the other different atmospheres that pertains to the oppressor. And you take a good example talking about the youth. Now, we not only know the history of the police department here in Chicago, we know the history of the police department in Chicago, in New York, in Philadelphia, in L.A. We have to understand the root of why they were even created. They're not here to serve and protect the community because, I mean, it's like the hospital. If they really gave you a cure for every disease that's out there, millions of people would be out of jobs. Wouldn't be no need for so many nurses. Wouldn't be no need for so many doctors because they'd give you the cure. If they really wanted you to be cured from AIDS, they'd give you the cure for AIDS. You don't have to be a billionaire in order to get the cure. But all of this is designed because they have to create chaos in order to further their economic exploitation. So they bring the drugs in the community to the youth. You know, Brother Rob mentioned to me before, he said he talked with a brother on the street who was selling crack. Asked the brother, do you know where this came from? The brother didn't even know. He just the last man standing to receive. You see? So there's root to all of this that it comes down. So when we as a people come together, we can't come together on just a half-assed way of thinking, as though that if we just pull some of our people together and we were trained into voting or we were trained into particular ways of the system, but we're not training for power. We're not training for a body politic. We're not training for our own nation. You see, if we sit down with the police department of any city, that should be a military force that represents our people sitting down with the military force or that state representative of the government. You know, if we're sitting down with the educational system, whether it's a CPS or any other particular school system throughout this country, then they're representatives of our educational department that's sitting down with them.
Brother, that we can't sit down with these devils and tell them and make them know what we're going to do. Anything that we do for ourselves, right, they know that it's going to be beneficial to us and uplift us. People are lazy, barbaric people by nature. If you gave black folk the right education, if you gave black folk the right knowledge of self, just like they get knowledge of self every day, and they're still more degenerate. You understand? If we get right knowledge of ourselves, we're going to go ahead of them. And every other race is going to get left behind. The devil won't make that happen. This is what we're living in today is planned strategy to keep us down. That's the only reason why the devil's got a little power. Because he always keeps the black man below his feet. When a Chinaman rises, he's going to try and keep us under his feet at all stages. That stops him from hitting rock bottom.
Excuse me,
back
brother.
To the caves
and
the hills of Europe. Say, brother, go on.
Step Rob.
Hey, brother. Hey, AC, how you doing?
I'm hanging in listening to the brothers, man. I just had a couple of questions that I'd like to get in there. I mean, I hear the brother talking
about
the devil.
Because I was about to bring you on anyway.
Thank you, sir. I hear the brother talking about the devil. I went through that with the Nation of Islam. It didn't work then. It won't work now. I hear the brother talking about nation, religion.
Let him finish.
I hear the brothers talking about nations and religions, and I just hope that they understand that that's another separation, that's another division, and division is not what needs to take place now. The brother was speaking about our present president, and anyone that expected him to be able to accomplish make any meaningful accomplishments in this situation has to be delusional. I mean, the gift that Obama brought to this situation was the simple fact that he dispelled the legend that black people were incapable of running this situation. And obviously, at this point in time, with everything that has been done before he arrived there, he's obviously doing a better job than any other president that has ever walked this planet, okay, for the simple reason that he is attempting, which is more than it can be said about any other president, he is attempting to be all-inclusive, including the quote-unquote devils that the brother was involved. And see, he has made the division crystal clear. The division truly is between those who have and those who do not. And some of the devils that we're talking about are definitely in that group. So in order, I mean, and, you know, you're talking about the true change that oppress our people, the true power that this ruling class holds, it seems to me is the exact thing that our people are trying to become a part of. And you have to understand that if you change the system that exists for another system operating on the same principles, i.e., economic. You're doing nothing but perpetuating the same thing that enslaves anything in the first place. If you don't continue the enslavement of our people, what you will wind up doing is enslaving another people. Continue the same.
I love what you said, brother. I love what you said, brother. Let me reply to that now. This is the reason why black folk, let me tell you something. I used to be on these streets hard. You understand? When I was before the age of 22, if my black brother, my fellow brother by nature even, looked at me wrong, he could have well died. Bottom line.
Yep.
Since I had the teachings and I started to listen, out of nowhere, someone must have played. There's some funny feedback in the background, you know. Chef Rob, can you clear that up?
I'm not sure who that is. It kind of stopped. Go ahead, brother, because I want to bring I want to bring a couple of other people on. Kavlina, man, your mic is open. You can chime open any time.
Yeah. Now, until I got that teaching and I must have heard Khalid Muhammad tape, the white man's the devil. I've been on this journey for 8 years. Me knowing that made me love my fellow brother more. I used to feel that I would have rather been, before the age of 23, I would have rather sit in a room full of my white, full of devils, rather than sit in a room full of niggas. Because of the simple fact that I would, especially my age, that is, I would have thought that, you know, they might try something, especially people, niggas I don't know. I was so anti. If I don't know you, you can't come around my house. I ain't gonna show you where I live. You know, we can talk and that, but I ain't gonna do no business with you, nothing, unless I grew up with you.
We should put it back to what's being negated, beloved.
No, I'm saying the teachings of. I'm saying. Brother, let me go in. Let me finish, yeah? And I'll let you go. And. What you got to understand as well now, every member of Marcus Garvey's movement and Elijah Muhammad's movement, these were the most, every member and the people in the Nation of Islam in that day, the people who were in the UNIA of that day, every single member was an example to all of us today of real unity and not hating up amongst the brothers and sisters, even though granted, that it was segregated at that time. So even granted that, and conditions and racism was more stronger when I meet on a direct level, right? And I'm saying every member of those people knew that the white man was the devil. They were teaching those kids, those kids that were reared up. They don't have their pants. The Negro that you see with their pants, and this is a majority of the young youth boys, are these Negroes who have their pants halfway up their leg. They don't know that the white man's the devil. You understand?
Yeah, they don't really care.
These house niggas who...
Again, we negate the more serious topic because many people have their opinions on what to call the white man. But one of the things that we negate, dear brother, is we negate the body politic of what we need to be doing as
a
people. You know,
brother.
And
you got
because we negate that body politic, we sit back and just like you mentioned, the UNIA, which is a perfect example, pretty brilliant, perfect example, is the UNIA under the right excellent Marcus Mosiah Garvey. And Marcus Garvey took the time to organize the UNIA to the point where the body structure of the UNIA can be consolidated. And then you could sit, if he had to sit with whoever, he sat with whoever. Our problem today is we don't have a body politic. We spend more time trying to sit with the oppressor. And always keep in mind, you had an FBI agent who implemented in COINTELPRO that it was their job to basically stop the rise of a black messiah who could electrify and unify the masses of black people. Listen to that. So,
well, you know, you
how
said,
do
brother,
we
you know,
as a people?
Now, let me come back at this.
How do we as a people?
You were talking about Mark Garvey, and then you jumped to Counter-Intel Pro, which was in the 60s and 70s. That's a 30-year jump, brother. I mean, there has to be some brain focus.
Let me finish the point. The point is, when you have the COINTELPRO and you have them to say what they said in COINTELPRO, and then you have them to do what they did to Marcus Garvey. Now,
the COINTELPRO?
We don't have. COINTELPRO was in existence during, it came into existence starting with Marcus Garvey. People think it actually started in 66, started with Marcus Garvey. Now, that particular piece, again,
brother,
going back to the UNIA, when you see
I'm going to come back to the brother,
field,
but you know, he cuts everyone.
When you have the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's
hold on.
Politics,
brother,
you have the UNIA body politics.
Wait a minute.
The COINTELPRO was developed in response to the Black Panther Party and the Civil Rights Movement.
Do your research. COINTELPRO was not a response to the Black Panther Party. That is the history that they want you to think. When you go back, J. Edgar Hoover, who was assigned to the Right Excellent Marcus Mosiah Garvey, started his project then. It was solidified and concluded with the Black Panther Party and the Civil Rights and the Civil Rights Movement. But now, my point again is, what we fail to do as a people is take the responsibility to literally build a body politic as a people, our own departments, whether it's a Department of Education, whether it's a Department of Agriculture, whether it's a Department of Health, you know, and we spend so much time arguing back and forth, debating back and forth with each other about certain issues, but we don't have the body politic that we can sit back and say it's ours.
When you sit
and you have the United States government, yes, indeed, look at this. Republicans and Democrats argue all day long. They let you feel as though they just can't stand each other. It's a split between them. It's a split between this. They argue back and forth, but guess what? They sustain the imperial agenda, both parties.
If we build our body politic
and we begin to put into perspective our own departments and stop focusing on whether or not we're going to sit at the table with the oppressor, whether or not we can have a meeting with the root cause of our problems, but begin to focus on building what needs to be done, and then we can move on and sit with whoever we plan on sitting with. But until then, how do we expect to sit down with anybody, whether it's the oppressor or whether it's even amongst ourselves? How can you sit down with an organized you got street tribes here. I'm from Chicago, brother. And you have, yes, there's street tribe brothers out there who killing each other, but you also have street tribe brothers who are conscious and organized.
The same thing out here.
Right, and so how do you sit with an organized organization who's looking for an alliance to deal with a body politic?
Hold on, Pop, hold on. Hey, slow down a minute. The sister been shut out a little bit. I want to go ahead and get her to chime in a little bit on how we deal with some of these issues. And one of the questions I have for the sister is, how far have we come with a lot of stuff that was just put on the table? Sister, you still there?
But I ain't even finished.
Hold on, Supreme. I'm going to let you come back to that. I'm going to let you come back. You know me, man. Okay, sister, you still there?
I'm still here, okay? And I hear what the brothers are saying and the other gentleman who came in and made some very valid points. Here's the bottom line. We're in a terrible state where we are today, and in order to resolve the issues in our community, we don't own this country. We live in it like everyone else, and we're either going to behave like we are a part of it, and we don't have to ask anybody for permission to do that. okay? We already have that permission. Now what are we going to do with it? So we need to begin to become more proactive about solving some of our problems. And it's not about sitting with the enemy and all of this stuff. It's about solving the problems in our community. And in order to solve the problems in our community, I got to sit at the table where the people who have the power are, okay? And you have to sit there too, because that's what it's all about. We have to learn how to get along and represent our people in a way that we can get what the people need. And that's not conceding. That's being strategic. Because what is the long-term future that we want to see? Do we want to see the children continue to kill each other because they're hopeless? You know, each of us have a child in our home. Why are the children behaving the way they are? Why don't we take personal responsibility from now and begin to do something with our children instead of coming up with all these excuses? No one stops anyone from doing something right now with your children. Take care of your children. Take care of your family. Care about your community. You know what I'm saying? So I hear some of you brothers, but guess what? My ancestors collectively done helped to build this country. And I don't think that when I go to the government or anywhere else to ask for anything, that I am begging for anything. My ancestors done paid the price. Plus, as a citizen and a taxpayer, you know, I'm not asking for the government's money. It's the people's money. And that's the thing that people forget. Okay? Government is people. And as to those who don't think that we should have some representation, I don't agree. But then we are free to agree or not agree. Because I have seen this last campaign, a lot of the young people who went through our training ran for office and won. Okay? Now you're going to have Latino, you're going to have gay, you're going to have all kinds of people out there representing. So guess what? It can happen. I think when we have a defeatist attitude, that the battle is already lost. I don't believe that I am hopeless, helpless, and a victim, and therefore I'm not going to come to the table and behave that way. And I think that that's part of our problem. We behave like victims, okay? In all of my time in different places in this country, when I come to the table, I come prepared. So come prepared. Don't come emotional. You know, don't come and ask for unrealistic things. And if you ask for it and you get it, could you do something with it? How many times have we asked for things, and they're still sitting on the table now, not because they weren't given, but because after we got it, we spent too much time celebrating. So I'm going to shut up.
Hold on. Let the sisters finish, okay?
Yeah, I am. Let the sisters finish.
Personal responsibility is what it's all about, okay? So we can talk about all kind of whoever. We already know who the system is, and we know what it has done, et cetera. However, what are we going to do about it, okay? We can homeschool our kids if we don't like the educational system. We can form our own schools if we don't like the educational system. When the children come home from schools, they can have African-centered learning, you know? So we got to stop. We can have Saturday schools like some people do. We can have after school like some people do, right? So I'm just saying to you that instead of us finding excuses, let us make a new day and find some solutions, right? And when we go to ask government for things that we, the taxpayers, have given our money to, we're not begging them. We are getting back a return on our money. And especially when it's investing in our communities and our children, then it's a return for the whole country. I'm just saying we need to change the way
Hey, Rob, let me go, man, Rob. Because this guy ain't even finished yet.
I'm just going to make straight statements now. Hold on, Supreme.
Can we go on in the order? Let me just share this one piece, brother.
Wait, hold on a minute. I got some people that's on the line who ain't spoke yet, so let me get them in, okay? Kavina, man, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, brother.
What do you think about the conversation thus far? Because you've been holding for the longest.
Oh, thanks, man. It's a great conversation, man. It shows is that Pan-African might be a little premature right now because you have so many brothers with so many issues. If I can make a quick analogy, it'll be like if we all decided to just come down to the park and let's play a sport. But some people bring a baseball, some people bring a basketball, a football, a bowling ball. We don't know what sport we're playing. Everybody's just showing up and start throwing in, and we're not organized enough to know this is what this group is working on. It's like we can't all just show up and one dude is fighting for saying people aren't a citizen, they were citizens of another country. Another dude is fighting about religion. Another dude is fighting about the white man is the devil. That's just so many topics. It's like brothers need to find the topic that they're interested in. If it's you know, inner city schools or whatever, get in that topic and get to work. And don't worry about what other brothers are trying to do, because a lot of people out here, they have their own issues. Let brothers get their issue in and work on what they're working on. And then when stuff starts to get solved, then we can come together and start talking about Pan-Africanism.
Listen, man. Let me make my statement.
Can we do this in order fashion, brother?
Yeah, let's do it in orderly fashion. Let's do it in orderly fashion. Because I don't know if you're probably saying... Chef, brothers are saying I'm taking up all the time. What kind of thing is that?
Come on, Pop. Don't address that right now. Don't address that. We'll come back to it later.
I'm going to make statements. Bottom line. This is the bottom line. We're in a fight. We got to know who our enemies are. Right? Bottom line. And listen to what I'm saying now. Garvey and Elijah, right? They didn't bother with politics. For me, politics, it just means us integrating in a system that is not catered for us. Just like when we go to the schools, all we learn is about devils. Bottom line. And listen, I'm not stuck on trying to teach the kids the devil. That's not my thing. I'm saying the term the devil, and everyone's trying to jump on that. Like, that's what I'm trying to tell people. I'm telling we got to do for self, and we got to come out of the system, come out of politics. This come off. I call the white man the devil. If you don't want to call the white man the devil, that's your business. You can call him whatever you want, beast. You could call him a good man. I ain't got no problem with that. I'm saying that the white man's the devil. That's my prerogative. Bottom line, why everyone's trying to tell me how to speak.
Okay, brother. Thanks for sharing that with us. Brother Muhammad, you chime in real quick.
Yes, sir. One of the things I wanted to say. Now, there was a time in the late 90s. We tried to revitalize the Black Panther Party in Chicago. We actually got it set off and going. Prior to that, in 1992-93, and I wanted to say this to the sister to prove a very basic point when we say we have to sit down with the people of power. In 1992-1993, we had what they would call a gang peace treaty. None of the aldermen, none of them put this thing together. It was the Stones, it was the Folks, it was the Vice Lords, it was the Kings, it was all of these cats who came together because they was tired of seeing the little brothers and the little sisters getting killed on the street, and they said no more. Now, what happened in Chicago, when this peace treaty settled, you had people like Mayor Daley and his deputy superintendent sit back and say, oh, they got to be up to something. It must be a hoax. Something is going on. This was all over the news. The next thing you know, and this is known throughout the communities in Chicago, next thing you know, that peace treaty was broken, not by the street gangs. It was broken by Chicago Police Department going back and forth in unmarked cars. They had switched their hat from one side into another neighborhood, shooting, and then going to another neighborhood, turning hat the other way and shooting. So that when the brothers see a car driving past and they see the hat turned in the opposite direction of who they are, they automatically assume, oh, man, they must be breaking the peace treaty. It's on that. When in reality, it was Chicago Police Department doing that. Because you have to understand, this government, when we talk about doing something for us as a people, look at us, look at what everything we've done, whether it's Black Panther Party, whether it's the peace treaty, whether it's when we tried to reinstitute the Black Panther Party in Chicago and our offices was raided. We was doing nothing but giving political education classes. Chicago police, every time they had, came to the office, wanted to know what we were doing, was raiding, was sitting outside the office. You see? And so it becomes a threat. Again, this threat is going to always be in existence that any time we as a people come together on something that we know is true. Now, the sisters say, take care of our children. Now, I'm in the public's eye every day, literally every day. And you ask some of the elders a question of, man, how did our children get this way? One of the most common answers that the parents give, that the elders give especially, is they feel as though when that whole, was it the DCFS period, when they took away from us whipping our children and then really disciplining our children the way we saw fit to discipline our children, so that it came a time when your children started talking back to you, telling you, yeah, go ahead and hit me, because if you hit me, I'm going to call the police. You see, we didn't have that problem before when we whipped our children. Then the government took over and said, no, you can't discipline your child that way. We going to tell you how to discipline your child, and if you discipline your child outside of how we telling you to discipline your child, you could get arrested. So they took that away from us. They took away for us to raise our children the way we saw fit to raise our children, and so that you have what you have today in our children. And then any organized organization who truly goes out there, I know teachers who wants to teach African curriculum in the Chicago public school system, but guess what? They're not allowed to do that because you have to abide by a certain curriculum that the Chicago public school system has. And so what do we say? Forget the Chicago public school system. Let's create our own schools, or let's support the private schools that we already have, and let's go ahead and expand on those. You see? So this is why we break up such schools like Freedom Home Academy with Brother Marcus Klein. You see, if there's a school that's already in existence, why don't we, especially here in Chicago, where you have that type of existence, why don't we come together and instead of just complaining about the problem of the school system, yes, have a core people that's going to deal with that, that's going to deal with the Chicago public school system, but also have a core people that's going to help expand that school that's already in existence so that we could get our children to that grammar school, that could change it to a high school, that could change it to a bigger institution, and we begin to bring our own children into our own way of thinking, training and raising our own way, our children into our own way. That's my point today on the show, dear brother.
Hold on, Supreme. Hold on, Supreme. I want to get everybody's
vote. No, I don't want to say nothing. I just want to ask the brother a question when he's finished.
Hold on. I want to cut because I got the person I want to talk to. I think he can go ahead and chime on this because he lives here locally. He's been living here locally. AC, AC, you still there?
Oh, yes. I'm still sitting and waiting.
Hold on. AC, so Ace.
Yes. This is AC I want to talk to. Hold on, since I come back to you.
AC, what do you think about what you just heard? Because you've been around here for a minute.
Well, let me start with the sister. Just let her know that I appreciate her nurturing nature, and it's definitely something that is truly needed in whatever direction that we decide to go in. As far as the brother with the analogy about all of us meeting at a field and playing different sports and blah, 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 that's a pretty good analogy. Let me go there and say if something like that were to truly occur, more than likely what should happen is that all of us would play something completely simple that everyone that could be involved in, and that would be competitive like tag instead of baseball, football, and basketball, something that everyone would participate in. And the reason I bring that up, the analogy that I'm trying to make is when all of those people come together for whatever reason, in this case, the survival of our people, when all of those people come together, we cut it down to the least common denominator. This is math here. You see what I'm saying? We break it down to the most simplest aspect of what the problem is. That goes back to the sister's desire to have this problem solved. We have to identify the most specific, the most horrific problem that our people are having, which is the lives of our people, the literal lives of our people. As far as the brothers are concerned, Brother Supreme, of course you have the right to speak about this situation as you wish. It is your freedom of speech. You have that is endowed to you. Even by this country's standards, that is endowed. Although they don't always practice it, they have stated it. But you have to understand that in order to accomplish what it is that you're trying to accomplish, you have to get as many people as possible involved. And there are some of those devils that at this point, are suffering the same atrocities that our people are. So I think that they should be included to bring this system where it needs to be brought, and that is to its knees. As far as the Marcus Garvey, the Elijah Muhammad situation, their intent, their accomplishment was to uplift our people, in both cases. Marcus Garvey let it be known that our people could come together on a specific point and go from there. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon his name, he brought it, he did the opposite of what the oppressors did to us. The oppressors made us feel like we were nothing. He turned it around to the complete 180 degrees and said that we were everything. Of course, we lied someplace in the middle. But what he accomplished was to lift us up from that position where we thought we were nothing and no one. So in closing, let me say, we have to go to the most basic needs, the most basic concerns of all of our people, and that is life, because we are actually, literally dying in this situation as it stands.
All I wanted to say to the brother before, I just want to ask him a question quickly. I'm going to be quick. Be specific. Are you saying that we should separate? Or, for me, being involved in politics, right, is integration. We need to come out of her. You understand that? Francis Grace Moore said, this position that we're in now will never end until we come out of her. For me, that would either mean us separating within the country that we're in and do for self within, try and build our schools, start small and build up, like you were saying. But us getting involved in politics, that can't work. That's what I'm saying, that Elijah and Marcus weren't doing that. But go on, brother.
Let me respond, brother. Let me respond. I agree with you. What I hear going on here, for the most part, what I have heard is, an attempt to operate from the belly of the beast. You are inside this animal. This animal has to, and do we all agree that this animal, this situation has to be defeated, not perpetuated. It has to be ended.
Right.
I mean, that's always been my perspective. That's always been my interest. If you're talking about ending this system, that's the only way we will achieve. I've only heard this word mentioned once tonight, so I'm going to say it a second time. To end this system is the only way that we will truly achieve freedom.
We cannot change
leadership in this system. Like I said before, if you change the leadership with the way this system operates, someone is going to have to be oppressed in this system.
Exactly.
Someone. At this point in time, we are all aware of who that someone is. Everything that I've heard, everything that I've experienced, because obviously this system continues to exist. Everything that I have experienced in my years has been a perpetuation of the system that has oppressed us from the beginning. The economy still rolls. And at this point in time, the economy, although more people are suffering, the economy is rolling stronger than ever.
Now, you know what? Because you were talking about politics, and for me, politics means integration, and we're in an integrated system. We're already integrated into the system, but it's a system that is run by the devil. If it was a system that was run by a neutral party, then we could more get our way. We've got a better chance. But because the system is controlled by the same people that enslaved us, and are still perpetrating wickedness, putting drugs in our community, and giving our youth guns. Right, and they're doing it all over the world to wherever our people stay. It can't work within their system. Bottom line, we can't vote our way out of this. That's what I really want to say. There's no voting our way out of this. We have to separate.
And I agree with the brother 100%. Because no matter, as the brother stated, no matter how much you change faces, the system is there. It's there. It's like your house. You can redecorate your home all day long, change the color of the walls, change the furniture, but guess what? The house is still on the same block. It's still at the same address. It's still in existence. You know, and I agree 100% with what that brother said.
And in this case, the house is a jail for our people.
Hey, Brother Comanche, you still there? Are you still there? I was trying to get your thoughts on views on what you just heard. Okay, Brother Kavina Man, could you break down some of the stuff you just heard?
Yeah, it's all good, man. I'll just keep listening, man. I'm enjoying the conversation.
Thank you, thank you. Hey, sister, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Go ahead and you tell me what you just heard.
Well, I think that, you know, we have to agree to disagree on how we approach things, and that's the beauty of life. And whatever it takes to motivate us, to get us to do what we need to do for our community, I'm for it, you know. My approach is a little different, and that's okay. There is no one solution. There are many solutions, as many as there are people. So what's important is what the brother and others have said, is that we focus on what our issues are and come together and work, you know, work towards it. And it should be our very lives that we're looking at, because I feel like we're on the genocide at times. But I don't spend time, you know, trying to make it a negative thing, because if we get caught up in feeling that, I know the system is out there, et cetera, and I know it's been set up to get us, et cetera, but I can't dwell on that. I have to dwell on what am I going to do to make sure it doesn't get me and doesn't get the children and doesn't move the community. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just saying I agree with some of the things that the brothers are saying. However, this is my approach, and my mother always says you catch more bees with honey than you do with vinegar, and so that's the approach I'm going to take. And I believe that, again, because of my experience and as an activist in Fort Myers and in Denver, seeing that a poor community can have a say, can get buy-in from the so-called majority community, that's the only way it's going to work. I'm not saying that that precludes that then I can't do things for us as Black and we can't have our programs, et cetera. No, you know, we can. Nobody's saying we can't. I'm saying that in order to get more for our community, we will have to participate, because that's how it is. And I'm not saying that I'm coming to the table as someone weak. I'm not coming for no crumbs. I'm coming for my piece of the pie. So I think it's what we believe, you know, sometimes how we are raised. And maybe because I've lived in different communities and I just had a little bit of different experience, that's my approach. I'm not discounting the other people and their approach. I'm just telling you what my approach is. So I think this is going to be a good thing. We're coming at it from many different perspectives. There's a lot of history on the phone right now. And some of the issues that some of the brothers have pointed out, you know, when we come, what is the least common denominator, you know, that we can rally around? Marcus Garvey was good at that. I think we have enough issues. As it relates to our youth, education, the fact that so many of us are dying, health issues, all kinds of stuff, the crime, the violence, the black-on-black violence, that we should just rally around these things, you know. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do, right? Not what someone else is going to do, but what are we going to do? And let that be our rally cry. And if we come to the table with that spirit of wanting to accomplish something, I think we will accomplish something. So,
exactly.
You know, I hear you. I hear you.
Let me ask you another
question. We had that conversation a couple of weeks ago. And just to give an example of how we could just do something on our own, just take the violence in the community. And could you imagine Brother Rob, Brother Supreme, that's the brother's name, right, Supreme?
AC and Supreme.
Could you imagine if the brothers and the sisters of the Black Panther Party, brothers and the sisters of the Nation of Islam, brothers and the sisters who are conscious of the street tribes and are out here trying to make positive efforts in the community, could you imagine that we didn't have to go to City Hall and ask for more police on the street, you know, if we just went to our own brothers and sisters and they stuck their head up, you know, and let go of their egos, let go of all the foolishness, and saw that here's a common denominator of security. You know, if you just saw, if brothers on the street, especially in Chicago, you know, it'd be times when we just walking down the street in just black fatigues on. And that right there alone just gets people, oh, man, who are these brothers? You know, and you could just be seen. People want to know what you're about. Man, what you about? What they on? Man, it captures their mind. You know, not only that, you'll see somebody telling a brother, oh, man, put that up, put that up, man. man, here come the brothers, here come the brothers, put that up. Even if it was like the nation, you see the brothers coming down the street with their suits on and bow ties. The brothers on the corner step to the side, like, oh, man, yeah, how you doing? Oh, assalamu alaikum. I mean, they might not even be Muslims. They just, assalamu alaikum, brother. Hey, man, put that up, man. Put that paper up, man. The brothers, man, they walking through. And imagine if we all came together so that the National Guards wouldn't be called. We don't have to go to CPD. We don't have to go to the National Guards. We took our head out of our ass and literally secured our own neighborhoods. You see, that would be an example of power that we chose to do. We didn't need no outside help. That's something that could literally happen.
Jeff Rob.
Go ahead, brother.
Jeff Rob. What was the brother's name that was just speaking? I didn't catch his name.
Brother Fakhar Muhammad.
Brother Fakhar Muhammad, I don't have to imagine the situation that you're talking about. Chef Rob actually grew up in the very situation that you were talking about. He grew up in a community where not only were the police unnecessary, they were not allowed in the community.
Exactly.
He grew up in a community where the drugs were kept out, where the gangs were kept out, where the entire community, a community of black people, were surrounded on all sides by white people. And yet and still, they continued to exist harmoniously, I might add. They were a complete family within that community. You want to know what happened? The police came in and took out the people who were responsible for this harmony.
Exactly.
And then the drugs and the gang came in and finished the situation off. Jeff Rob, do I speak gospel?
That's gospel.
And that's why if we get that situation back, then we can resort. And I just leave it at that to what I 100% agreed on with you earlier.
Well, see, and let me just say to the sister, I meant it honestly. I truly appreciate your nurturing nature. You women will have been and will always be the sheath to the black man's angry sword. We need to sometimes put that sword away. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. But, you know, from my experience, and my experience is extensive, sitting down to the table, I mean, you can't sit down at the table alone. And if you sit down at the table with a group of people, there's always something, someone within that group that shows weakness, shows vulnerability, and that's where the oppressors attack. And my suggestion is that is what we must do in return, attack their weaknesses. And their weaknesses are they are in the minority worldwide. They may have a majority in this country, but they are in the minority worldwide. That's their weakness.
Exactly.
Hey, Brother Supreme.
Yes, brother. Yes, brother.
Go ahead, chime in on what you just heard.
Well, I'm in agreement with the brothers. You know, once we get it straight about the political thing, because, you know, I don't believe black folk can, you know, do any if as long as we get ourselves too caught up in integration, and too caught up, we've got to have the mindset that we want to do for self. If we, the longer we're around these devils, I mean, we infiltrate ourselves. When we send our children to schools, send them to the universities, they go pick up a white woman, another woman from another race, you know. The moment you put your kids around other kids of other races, you're putting down your gun. You know, you're disarming yourself. The fact that we have to go to schools where a white man's teaching us, or, you know what I mean? A devil can't teach a black man. You understand? Just like a black man can't teach a devil. Because we ain't listening to them.
Okay. Let me just say that, you know, one more comment as far as the education is concerned. In actuality, there's only the only thing that is truly important as far as education is, of course, math and sciences, which is the basis for everything that you need to know, and the arts, which supply a softer side, diversity in your education, and of course, language to understand, for lack of a better term, to understand the words of your enemy. And, you know, so if, just as long as you can communicate with him on an even scale, for instance, and don't get it twisted, I have no problem with what they labeled Ebonics. I used to always consider it a secret coded language for black people only, until, of course, were members that used that language to themselves and expose all of the secrets that black people once held amongst themselves, expose it to the very people who are trying to use it against them. It sickens me to be a white person walking up talking about, what up, bro, what's the deal, and all of this other stuff. I mean, you know, it's not paying homage to me. It's basically showing, yeah, we know exactly what you're talking about. And the only defense that he had back in the day was our community and the fact that they didn't understand what we were saying. But at the same time, I was trying very hard to understand their language, because you have to understand what your enemy is saying. And that was my
I also wanted to say something that, you know, I'm not going to get on the issue about the devil, because I'm going to use that word until I die, hopefully. And show me some goodness, then I'm going to stop using it. But I want to just get to this. Even if we know math and science in school, in the education system, we're going to still need grades in English, humanities, religion. Well, I can speak for the UK. You could have an A in sciences, an A in maths. It doesn't mean that you can go to the best schools. If you're poor in other lessons like English, your humanities, your religious education, your PE, you won't get in, because they need a certain amount. You need to have a certain amount of GCSEs, which we call it out here in the UK.
I thought we were just talking about not being a part of their educational system. The only thing I was talking about when I was suggesting that, you know, concentration on the maths and sciences, that's how you survive in this world.
I wasn't saying nothing to that. I was just trying to say you've got to be, because for purposes, we've got to be, accurate with what we're saying. Because you say the youth are listening, they'll think, oh, all I need is math and science. They need to be good in as many disciplines as they can. English,
I agree
art,
with that.
Everything.
I agree with that. I didn't say all you need. I said the most significant, the most important.
The most important is math and science.
That's transferable to whatever it is that you're doing. I mean, math and science can go, whatever field you decide to go in, it's going to be beneficial to know math and to know science.
Of course.
Because basically science teaches you how to solve problems.
Hold on a minute. Hold on. Let me come back to the sister real quick, because I want to get back to the why do thing, because that's why we're here. We want to go ahead and get some little bit more clarity in that. Sister, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I got something. There's a couple of questions I have for you again. Why do? The platform for why do, is that agenda similar to what the people were doing during the civil rights movement? Is there any similarities to that?
We're really talking about the unity of Africa, you know, and in the case of WADU, the unity of the diaspora, so that we can participate in Africa with the African Union. So that's what it's all about.
Okay, so how does that translate to a lot of this? You know, economics is one of the things I think we got the biggest areas in. What areas here? Because for me, I think that, hey, look, if we get more involved in farming and agriculture, that will go ahead and alleviate a whole lot of problems. We'll solve everything, but alleviate a lot of problems. How far do I do ready to go?
We
need U.S. farmers, and U.S. black farmers in particular, and farmers in general throughout the diaspora and in Africa.
Well, personally, I support that. When I look at the inner city here and I look at the food deserts, et cetera, and I see all those empty lots and buildings, and I look down where the black farmers are down in Pembroke, and they're not fully utilizing their land, and yet we have an issue here with the quality of food and lack of good fresh food, there needs to definitely be some kind of collaboration. So, you know, you have Black Oak Farms down there, Basu Farms and other farms, and as far as I'm concerned, part of strategy in how we pull our community together is to begin to connect young people to programs that these places have and begin to reintroduce them back to the land. You know, when you look at in Africa what's happening, some of those people who are coming out of the mining business, they're going into farming. When you look at the amount of land that's being leased to foreign countries to grow food in Africa while African people are hungry. We know that food is the next thing. Food and water are going to be the things that people are going to fight over. So, again, I'm saying to you, you know, we have a lot of serious issues. You go into some of these food stores in our communities, and they got all this old, stale stuff, right? And nobody's holding them accountable. Shouldn't even be going there in the first place. But we have opportunities. How do we assess our need and begin to connect within our community like we used to do in the old days? Sadly to say, when the community was more segregated, you know, I have to be honest and say, when I look at this integration and I look at how poorly we're doing, I can't say that it was so wonderful for us at all, okay? And when you look at other communities, even though we call about an integrated community, the only people trying to integrate is ourselves. The fact is, I don't need to go and sit beside someone in order to prove that I am good, I'm better, I'm strong within myself, and that's what our community needs to understand, you know? So it's not about being segregated. It is about loving self. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, Marcus Garvey said, race first, and if so, have pride in yourself. Think about yourself. Uplift yourself. You know, it's not about putting down someone else. It is about uplifting yourself. So that's what my opinion is. I would just say to others, the only person that I can change is me, right? The only person you can change is you. So what will we personally, what will I personally do? That's what everybody needs to ask. What commitment am I going to make to the upliftment of our people? And the first thing we can do is to begin to talk to each other and begin to build bridges, you know, get to know Caribbean, African, Afro-Latino people, because we are African people. And it may sound simplistic to some people, but, you know, it has to start there. Because other groups are able to put their personal differences to the side in order to focus on collective goals. And it's very immature for us as a people to be unable to do that. That's no one's fault but our own, you know? So we can keep talking about the devil, and I'm not trying to put you down there, brother, when I say that, but sometimes the devil is ourselves, okay, and how we treat each other. Because there is no reason for us to treat each other the way we do. And yet we do. So I don't have time to focus on external. I need to focus on me, right? Me, how do I treat me? And how do I treat you? How do I treat my people in my community? That we have control of. Like the brother said, you know, they used to have policing in their own community and the cops didn't come in there. That's...
Oh, I think the sister dropped off. Wow, that's...
That was a wonderful thing.
Hey, now.
Yeah, I don't understand how everyone's on this devil thing, you know. Like, at the end of the day, you know, I don't even want to discuss that. We should just come off that. We should just come off that. Go on, brother.
I mean, like I said, I was there, brother. You know, I went through that. I was there, brother. There's nothing wrong with that. There's understanding, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But some of the devils that you're talking about, they're getting bumped upside the head just like everybody else right about now. That's how it's broken down. It's broken down to the haves and have-nots. That's why, I mean, that's the only way that the dark-skinned brother got put in office twice. Because the devils realized that, you know, their interests weren't being considered at all. And this, like I said, this, you know, he presented, and he was serious. So take the brother at his word. He was trying to offer hope. Well, you know, any brother that spent any time in this country understands what happens to hope in this country. It's, they try to crush that as soon as possible because that's the last thing they want you to think. No, no, there is no hope. That's what they're trying to get you to absorb into yourself, that there is no hope. And this brother came out and made it a lie because not only did he get elected once, he got elected twice. Now, the question is, what happens after that? But like I said, the die has already been cast. It's already been proven. I mean, well, we knew it all along. But now the whole world knows it. The whole subject, the country has to finally accept it. The whole world knows it. Black people can do anything that they want. They can run. I mean,
right.
This is supposed to be the only superpower. There's a black man running it, regardless of what Congress wants to say. There's a black man running
right.
The only superpower in this world. Okay? There's a black man with his hand on the button. Okay? So, you know, all of that, all of the myths that they used to talk about black people in this country, all of the myths, shiftless, lazy, no ambition, no intelligence, all of that crap. Shot. Because if he ain't the smartest man, he's okay. I, you know, when I was 9 years old, I saw their president get assassinated. I go back that far. I go back to Eisenhower, okay? Eisenhower was a general, but he couldn't deal with the racist issue. You know, as a matter of fact, the racist issue continued after Eisenhower, okay? It continued after Kennedy. It continued after Johnson, Nixon, and all of the presidents. But you can't run that game now. You can't, I mean, you're stupid. I mean, you were stupid back then. But it comes to the fore, you're really stupid to say something negative about a race, the black race, you know, in particular. The prejudice now, the stereotype now, just doesn't fit because we've got one that's running the country. And I would suggest that he's offered more, but that's one of the most important things that he's given the country.
Hold on, everybody. Let me take a quick break. We'll take a quick break. I want everybody to go ahead and get a breather because we're going to go into overtime for just a little bit and continue this conversation. Hold on, listen to this one here.
Niggas are scared of revolution. But niggas shouldn't be scared of revolution. Because revolution is nothing but change. And all niggas do is change. Niggas come in for murder and change into pimping clothes. Hit the streets to make some quick change. Niggas change their hair from black to red to blonde. And old black hair that looks for change. Niggas kill other niggas just because one didn't receive the correct change. Niggas change from men to women, from women to men. Niggas change, change, change. You hear niggas say, things are changing, things are changing. Yeah, things are changing. Nigga things into black nigga things. Black nigga things that go through all kinds of changes. The change in the day that makes them rap and rave. Black power, and the change that comes over them at night as they sigh and moan. Light side, ooh, light side. Niggas always going through bullshit change. But when it comes for real change, niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas are actors. Niggas are actors. Niggas act like they're in a hurry to catch the first act of the great white hope. Niggas try to act like Malcolm. And when a white man doesn't react to them like he did Malcolm, niggas wanna act violently. Niggas act so cool and slick, causing white people to say, what makes you niggas act like that? Niggas act like you ain't never seen nobody act before. But when it comes to acting out revolution, niggas say, I can't dig in action. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas are very untogether people. Niggas talk about getting high and riding around in L. Niggas to get high and ride to hell. Niggas talk about pimping, pimping that, pimping what? Pimping yours, pimping mine. Just to be pimping is a hell of a line. Niggas are very untogether people. Niggas talk about the mind, talk about my mind stronger than yours. I got that bitch's mind upside. Niggas don't know a damn thing about the mind, but they be right. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas fuck. Niggas fuck, fuck, fuck. Niggas love the word fuck. They've been there so fucking cute. They fuck you around. The first thing they say when they're mad is fuck it. You play a little too much for them. They say fuck you. When it's time to TTB, niggas are somewhere fucking trying to be nice to them. They fuck over you. Niggas don't realize why they're doing all this fucking. They're getting fucked around. But when they do realize, it's too late. So niggas just get fucked up. Niggas talk about fucking, fucking that, fucking this. Fucking yours, fucking monsters, not knowing what they're fucking for. Ain't fucking for love and appreciation. Just fucking to be fucking. Niggas fuck white side, black side, yellow side, brown side. Niggas fuck ankles when they went out of size. Niggas fuck Sally, Linda, and Sue. And if you don't watch out, niggas will fuck you. Niggas will fuck fuck if it could be fuck. But when it comes to fucking for revolutionary causes, niggas say fuck revolution. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas are players. Niggas are players, are players. Niggas play football, baseball, and basketball while the white man is cutting off their balls. When a niggas play ain't tight enough to play with some black thighs, niggas play with white thighs to see if they still have some play left. And when ain't no white thighs to play with, niggas play with themselves. Niggas tell you they're ready to be liberated, but when you say, let's go take our liberation, niggas reply, I was just playing. Niggas are playing with revolution and losing. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas do a lot of shooting. Niggas do a lot of shooting. Niggas shoot off at the mouth. Niggas shoot blue. Niggas shoot traps. Niggas cut around the corners and shoot down the street. Niggas shoot sharp branches at white women. Niggas shoot dope into their arms. Niggas shoot guns and rifles on New Year's Eve. On New Year's, if that is coming in, the white police would do more shooting at them. Where are niggas when the revolution needs some shots? Yeah, you know, niggas are somewhere shooting this shit. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas are lovers, niggas are lovers, are lovers. Niggas love to see Clark Gable make love to Marilyn Monroe. Niggas love to see Taj and fuck over NATO. Niggas love to hear Lone Ranger yell, high on silver. Niggas love commercials, niggas love commercials. Oh, how niggas love commercials. You can take niggas out of the country, but you can't take the country out of niggas. Niggas are lovers, are lovers, are lovers. Niggas love to hear Malcolm rap, but they didn't love Malcolm. Niggas love everything but themselves. But I'm a lover too. Yep, I'm a lover too. I love niggas, I love niggas, I love niggas. Because niggas are me, and I should only love that which is me. I love to see niggas go through changes, love to see niggas act, love to see niggas make them plays and shoot the shit. But there's one thing about niggas I do not love. Niggas are scared of revolution.
Hello, welcome back to the Chef Rob Show. I'm your host, Chef Rob, and we're talking with the sister from the Wadu organization, Cecilia Johnson. So, sister, you there?
Yeah, I'm still here, brother.
So, you know, are we scared of a revolution, or should we be using that word? You know, what should we be doing? Let me say this real little bit. Is Wadu prepared for that sort of revolutionary type situation to go ahead and get us out of what's already happening?
I can only speak for myself, and what I'm saying to you basically is that, you know, we are talking about unification of the continent, and we're talking about what steps can we take in order to help that. When you say revolutionary, you know, to me, we've seen revolution, and the day after the revolution, we don't have any hands to run the hospitals, we don't have any hands to run the schools. You know, we inherit the colonial system, and we continue to perpetuate it because we didn't take the time to create our own curriculum, et cetera. So I'm a little bit beyond that. I'm beyond this talk of revolution, even though many people are saying that my thinking is revolutionary. What's more important to me is the day after. You know, are we ready to lead ourselves? Are we ready with our institutions? Like the brother said, you don't see no institutions, you know. And are we ready with the skills needed to lead ourselves into the future? So that's what we're doing is about, okay?
Okay. Brother Vukan, you there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So, you know, that term revolution, the sister just said something. Are we ready to lead ourselves?
You know, Brother Malcolm said it best. We use that word too loosely, you know. If we organize one thing like the sister said and the other brother, I agree with him, man. We gotta organize this thing. We gotta come together. And my primary mission in this whole movement, man, is the body politic. Unless we get that body, our own governing body together, where we can sit. I mean, just take a look at the example, what we got on this phone. You know what I mean? If you can have one brother that's good at economics, you know, and that's one of the things that I always say, we have to be very careful because all of us can't start on the same subject. But if we took the subjects that we're good in, imagine what we could create in a room if we had an economist in the room, if we had an agriculturalist in the room, if we had, you know, educator in the room. Those are three departments of the body of politics that could be built and beginning, and then they could go to others who are like-minded with them in that same subject field, and we move on. When we can move on that level, Brother Rob, and build this body politic and be serious about it, and that economists have meetings with the rest of the economists. The brothers, the agriculturalists, the farmers, they have their meetings. You know, everybody has their meetings, but we got it by standards. We got it by principles. We got it by the programs that's going to unite us. But most importantly, we committed to the building of that body politic. When we can do that, brothers, then I honestly and humbly will say that we could be ready for that.
Okay. Brother AC, what do you need to add to that?
As you know, Chef Rob, I have a problem with the economy because, for me, the economy involves money, and money is the reason that the situation has gotten to the point that it has now. If people are operating from a concept where their consideration is the benefit of the whole, you know, the benefit of all people, then actually an economy is not necessary. Now, I know that may sound utopian, but me personally, I don't have a problem with a utopia. You see what I'm saying? I mean, if everybody is out there trying to take care of the people that are here, I mean, the organization all falls into place. If your concern becomes your fellow man, your brother and sister, then, you know, organization falls into place, like, automatically, because you're not concerned about being better than somebody else. You're concerned about the welfare and well-being of everyone. Now, like I said, I know that's a little idealistic and a little utopian, but I have no problem with idealism, and I have no problem with a utopia.
No, that's not utopia. When people ask me, what do you mean by the economist? I don't mean anything pertaining to, like, the United States currency or anything to that nature. Understand that our economy, as the brother, I believe he was alluding to, correct me if I'm wrong there, brother, but, you know, we had times where our economy was just trading sugar with each other. If I had sugar and I needed sugar,
I can appreciate the barter. You give me a service, I give you a service back.
Exactly.
I can do that. That works.
That's why I utilized the two things together. And when I utilized both the agriculturalist and the economist, because now you got two different departments that's operating on the same wavelength.
If you're building my house and I'm cleaning your toilet, and
exactly,
you know, I trade your house building for my toilet cleaning, then, you know, my vocation is just as important to you as your vocation is to
exactly
me. Provide me shelter, I provide you hygiene.
Exactly.
One hand washes the other, I can work
and
with
that. And that's what we call
and
the same, that's the same level.
Education, nurture our kids, so she gets covered too. I can work.
Hey, Brother Supreme, you still there?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, bro. I'm just letting the brothers go in because, you know, I don't want to get cut when I speak, so I'm just respecting the law of the land.
I got to ask you a question.
No,
Supreme.
You guys go on, because you guys were, I mean, you two men.
Let me ask you a question. Hold on, brother. You know, you see that a lot of areas that we need to go ahead and be working on to go ahead and bring us out of this thing that we're in. What area you think we can go ahead and make it in first, where we can go ahead and help get us ourselves out of this situation?
The first thing, and probably the most easiest thing, is the mentality of our people. It's the mental dealing with, get rid of the Stockholm syndrome that we are, you know, stop feeling sorry for these devils, stop wanting this system to keep on running, the Willie Lynch syndrome that is going on within our race. If we've got dark-skinned children, we've got to make them feel beautiful about themselves, not want to perm their hair and look like the devil's women, you understand, and not feel funny about their skin complexion because they're dark, and them wanting to be light, make them love themselves. We have to deal with the mental of our people, and we have to know who the enemy is, and that's why I say the white man's the devil, just to make me know every day that I know who my enemy is. That's why I refer to them as a devil when I'm around you guys. But obviously, when I'm around them, I can't let them know how I feel while I'm on the plantation.
Yeah, you want to go in on that?
I have to agree with the brother as to the issue of identity. That is the biggest challenge that is facing us today. The fact that many people do not love their beautiful black skin. And so you see a high percentage of people bleaching, not only on the continent, in the Caribbean, but all over the darn place, you know. So this issue of identity is a critical piece. And I think once we address that issue, that will come into other things. And you address that issue by telling the children the truth, by being real about our history, and showing them not only, you know, kings and queens of Africa, no, ordinary people who were quite successful and very smart and did brilliant things, you know, coming out of slavery, how many black inventors there were. A lot of the things that we use today on a regular basis were invented by black people. So we don't have to go the king and queen path. We can go to an ordinary, normal person who was very smart and did so many great things. So I agree with him on the identity. And then we also, as far as the identity, we're going to improve that through education. And that is why this African-centered curriculum is very important. So whether your children, you can do something simple as going into your children's classroom and seeing what's there. I went into my grandchildren's classroom the other day, and when I looked at some of the books that were there for social studies, and she's only 5 years old, I saw some of the depictions of Africans in a way that I didn't think was appropriate, and I had the teacher pull the book. So, you know, we have to do some policing, you know. These are our children. One of my mentors says to me, we're the only people who send our children to the enemy and wonder why they all screwed up in the head. And I agree with that, because the system is not here to inculcate an African-centered thinking or even our way of life. And I love what the brother is talking about, bartering and how we should not degrade one job over the other, because it really shouldn't be. That is a Western and a European way of looking at things. And a lot of African people have picked up that attitude today, okay? So I hear a lot of love here on the show today. And I hear a lot of caring, and I think that, like, we have everything we need. We just need to get it together, like Brother Farquhar talks about, have a plan. You know, agriculture should be a big area also, because we need to feed ourselves, you know. It's as simple as that. So education, agriculture, and dealing with the economics of it, trading and bartering and creating opportunity for ourselves within ourselves. We can shut a lot of people down. The goal is not to shut them down. The goal is to empower us. If they happen to get shut down at the same time, that's so sorry for them. That's not my problem, you know. But when it comes to uplifting us, we need to not make any excuses. No one has the right to tell us that we should not care about ourselves and ourselves first, you know. So I would just like to say, let us be empowered to do that. So let's deal with the issue of identity. We can address that through education. And once the children are getting an education, we need to look at, the brother was talking about, the type of education they have in England, et cetera. We have the same thing in the Caribbean. Is the education that we're getting giving us the skills that we can use to compete today, you know, even to uplift ourselves? So we need to be evaluating that. Again, we don't need nobody to, we don't need to wait on anybody to do that, you know. Some of the elders who have died, Issa Hewlett and all of that, have already created African-centered curriculum. So come on now. You know, it's time for us to implement a lot of the work that the elders have done. And I would also like to recommend the book, Destruction of Black Civilization by Chancellor Williams. It's a great book. And Amos Wilson, Black Power. Because these brothers don't spend a lot of time, you know, researching and explaining what has happened to us. And today we should not be going through this game over and over. You know, he already broke it down. So I would encourage people to begin to read some of the stuff that the ancestors have left for us, and to think that we can do it. And it may sound simple, but yes, it starts with belief, okay? You have to believe that you can do it, and that's half of the way to doing it, and come together and redefine. You know, if the brother say he's not into this money thing, that's fine. Then let us create barter and trade amongst ourselves, you know? We have the power, people. That's all I'm basically saying. You know, we control our destiny. And yes, we have some sleeping policemen or whatever sitting in the way, but we control that. You know, when we begin to ignore certain things, focus on ourselves, uplift ourselves, then we won't become so consumed with them. They have no excuse to be in our community trying to terrorize us. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The things that we can control, can we please do something about that? You know.
And that's a beautiful point that Sister is making. She's making a very beautiful point, because, you know, again, look at us on the phone. How many times have those of us who have the knowledge, you know, we could sit and we'll see others like us sitting talking. They have a history class amongst themselves. You know, that's not needed. If you already know it already, why sit back and keep having the same conversation over and over? What's stopping us from taking the helm of responsibility amongst each other first? And I always use that example, beloved brother, when they had the reparations conference here in Chicago, and they was hyping the crowd up with what we should do to unify with each other. Our people need to unite. We need to come together. We know that already. This is something that's been said thousands or trillions of times. But I stood up and I asked them. The panel consisted of Chairman O'Malley, Esatella, Conrad Worrell, many other representatives from many other organizations. And I stood up and I asked them. I said, you know, I hear what you all saying, and we hear what you're saying in the audience. But my question to you is, that same unity that you're asking the audience, which is like asking the diaspora to unite, have you united with each other to build continuity with each other in your own governing politics with each other? Are you all meeting once a week or once a month, coming together on some type of structural platform that you all are building? And they answer, no, we're not.
You can walk through any black, predominantly black neighborhood throughout the city of Chicago and get the answer to that, brother. You know the answer is no.
Exactly.
Because
if
it was anywhere close to what it was that you were talking about, the first thing that would happen is our neighbor. We don't need people to police our neighborhoods. We can police our own neighborhoods. We don't need people.
Exactly.
We don't need people to put up our neighborhoods. We can clean up our own neighborhoods.
Exactly.
And everything
that's right.
that is offered to us from outside, we can bring inside.
Our
people don't have to do anything. But
exactly.
walk down the street to get any and everything they want if the diaspora was indeed brought together.
Exactly. And that's why I agree with the sister strongheartedly.
Of course.
That's why I agree with the sister strongheartedly, because those of us who educated, we don't have to keep educating ourselves about the same thing. We'll leave that to the ones who don't know. We'll give them that class. But those of us who know, we need to make the move. Start taking responsibilities and obligations to put this thing together and do it.
That's right.
Well, one of the other things that has happened is so many people think that the history doesn't matter. The only thing that I can offer to this situation, the only thing that I can offer to this conversation is the fact that I have been through what it is that you're talking about. The sister and the brother
exactly.
were talking about how people, you know, don't respect their blackness. I thought we went through
mm-hmm.
that. As a matter of fact, I'm mm-hmm. sure we went. The Honorable Elijah mm-hmm. Muhammad was telling people, you know, he didn't particularly care for his light skin. He knew where that came from. You know, he didn't
exactly.
disrespect it, though. I mean, you know, he didn't hate his light skin. He accepted it for what it was. But he knew it was supposed to be different. Basically, those of us who are of a darker hue of a pure blood. Now, you know,
right.
like I said, I mean, this is just a true fact. These people have not been diluted. They have the pure blood of what we consider black people. Now, for my money, they are fortunate in that respect. As a matter of fact, they should be lauded for it. I mean, they were able to escape things like rape or assimilation, I'll call it. I mean, you know, because you know, this thing about not being able to choose who you love, okay, I'll accept that. But, you know, until this situation between these races has been resolved, that's a non-starter for me personally. I love my black sister, always will. So, you know, that's a non-starter for me. I won't cross that line because, on the side of that line are so many things that have been detrimental to my people. My apologies, but I won't cross that line because of that.
That's cool, brother.
And
Brother Supreme.
I hear you, brother, and I really appreciate that. Can I say something? I think that one thing that is missing is our acknowledgement of what has happened to us, and we have never had any atonement. You know, they have some groups who never let you forget how many of them died, you know, in World War II, and millions, you know, hundreds of millions of our people have died and continue to die till today, and yet we are the only group that does not acknowledge, you know. And so we die because we don't acknowledge what is happening to us, what has happened to us, what continues to happen to us, and we act as if our lives are not important. So as we move forward, this atonement, you know, for what has happened, this speaking truth to what has happened to us, you know, is very important as part of the history, that self-knowledge. And when we realize and feel pain for how many have died and say not again, then maybe we will come together. you know, and find a solution for this. We have run the world. All civilization, all of society came out of us. You know, Africa is the cradle of civilization. You know, they cannot dispute that. So why would you think that
the womb of the world
is less than, you know?
But excuse me, one thing. Atonement, that is for the perpetrator, and that is a besmirchment of their souls, of their character. Because you can, if you do not atone for the wrongs you have done, follows you throughout your life. Okay.
Right. That's perhaps the wrong word that I have used. You know.
But I understand.
But
what you're
saying. It's more a memorial and a of what has happened to us.
Your life will never be whole if you do not accept responsibility for the wrongs you have committed. So that is a sin that we do not bear at this point in time. Now the other thing,
I agree.
We are definitely, and I love your existentialist approach. You are the center. Everything else revolves around you. If you cease to exist, whatever is going on here no longer matters. So therefore, you have to be concerned about what it is that you are. How it is that you are doing, and to the brother, brother Muhammad was talking about, and I witnessed this. I was so proud when the brothers, the Nation of Islam, got together and started coming to the neighborhood where the violence was. The violence ceased, completely stopped. Okay, now I wish they could do that on a daily basis, but the fact of the matter is, it doesn't just take the Nation of Islam. All those brothers represented is manhood. And womanhood of black people. That's all they represent. You don't have to wear and a bow tie to represent that. You can represent that in your everyday life, which is something that I dearly practice.
And that's why
I use the representation of
one thing I am, it is a man, and I represent myself as such. And every moment that I walk this planet, but that's just me. From, you know, I know a lot of other people like that. I've talked to them. But I know that that's something that I do. And another thing that I always try to do, I speak truth. Someone told me at some point in my life that the only reason that you lie is because you're afraid. And I'm not afraid of anyone
but
God. God knows everything, so there's no need to even try to lie to him.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right.
Well, yeah, that's why I brought up those three. That's why I brought up, especially when I mentioned in the organizations like Black Panther Party, Nation of Islam, as an example of security, because I was dealing with the psychological effect of the youth. You know, the youth are so entombed into clothing and all these other type of material type of gears that sparks their interest. And, yes, of course, we can have brothers out there in plain clothes, you know, and I don't like to use plain clothes and just make me think of the pigs, but we can have brothers in just their regular clothes, you know.
Everyday wear.
Everyday wear. And that's, of course, that needs be. But, you know, I just brought that particular example up as it relates to the psychological effect of our youth today, especially as it pertains to this rap phenomenon and the whole hip-hop, which would be another, I guess that would be another show, Brother Rob. The whole hip-hop genre, and that's why I brought that example up, because they so excited.
But like I was saying, Brother Muhammad, I loved it. I really did. It brought joy to my heart to see the brothers marching through the neighborhood, and for the violence, I mean, the Chicago Police Department is running around here with all of their wherewithal, all of their resources, all of their manpower, and all it took was some of the brothers to march through the neighborhood, and crime completely stopped.
Exactly.
So why is it that you don't incorporate that in your efforts? All of this money that you're giving out, why is it you don't incorporate that in your crime prevention situation that you boast so much? You want to run some statistics to me. When I saw the factual basis of what a few well-organized, well-intended men can do in the neighborhood, no black person in his right mind trusts the Chicago Police Department. You'd have to be crazy to do that.
Exactly.
So your effectiveness as a policeman, quote-unquote, in this city is already ruined. And you're not doing anything to correct that. You know, you're a waste of time. And you should turn it over to somebody that can actually accomplish something. But no, because that affects the bottom line.
Exactly.
The only reason you continue to do that is because you get paid for it. Which is basically stealing. Because if you're getting paid for a job and you're not doing it, that's theft.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then even to expand on what you're saying, brother, they have to protect the drug trade and the prison industrial complex. All of this stuff ties in. And so what needs them to do that can allow us,
I've spoken with Chef Rob about this. That is the underside of the economic belly, what you're
exactly.
talking about. The prison system. Wait a minute. I think the sister was speaking about this earlier, about brothers serving their time and therefore deserving to come out with a clean slate, except for one thing. While they're serving their time, they're going through a great deal of dehumanization so that they basically come out of the situation animals and they can't adjust to what's going on outside, so they wind up back inside to do it again. Don't you understand that just perpetuating money, that's the underside of the economic belly? Now, this is the low part of it. Drug trade, like you said, of course they're going to protect that because there's money that runs through that drug trade.
Exactly.
You can call it dirty money. You can call it whatever kind of money you want to call it. It's still money.
Money. Exactly.
So it's part, and that makes it part of the economic. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. Of course they're going to protect that. It's their vested interest. They're protecting the money.
Hey, hold on a minute. Hey, Brother Supreme, you still there?
I'm in, brother.
Okay, because we're gonna close this out in a minute here, man. I'm going to get started with you first, man. Go ahead and throw your final thoughts out there.
Yeah, I'm just saying, of course, we have straight forgotten the teachings of the great Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the great Honorable Marcus Garvey. We got to stick to progressive methods that have been tried and successfully done, even though it only went on for a short time. We have to. And our kids have forgotten all of that. These youth that are out here killing each other and wearing their trousers halfway up their leg, the girls who are perming them, relaxing their hair, they don't know who came before them trying to do these. They don't know who Marcus Garvey is. They don't know who Elijah Muhammad is. They might have heard of the name, but they don't know what they're good for.
Brother Foucan.
Yes, sir. Again, I would just say we have to come together to build this body structure, brother. You know, and I would also go even further for those of us that are on the phone, and of course, Brother Rob, that are probably, well, I guess I'm putting responsibility on you, brother, to collect the info from these brothers and sisters and the sister on the phone, and we start getting together. You know, even if the brothers in UK and the brothers and in Colorado, we build communications with each other. You know, because most importantly, you know, the sister brought up Dr. Amos Wilson. And the brother, of course, we all know of Dr. Amos Wilson and his thorough research and all. And the one thing that the brother started his book out with, alongside of the psychology in Blueprint for Black Power, that he stressed is for us to organize the structural components that's going to lead us to the progress of where we need to be. And so I just leave with that, dear brother. But, of course, for us to communicate with each other, let's not get off this phone. And, man, that brother, he was saying some on-point stuff, and we don't ever hear from each other no more. We got to start building communications with each other. But most importantly, have continuity in that communication. You know, let's not just talk today and the next time I hear from you is 3 months from now just to see what's going on. You know, continuity and the body politic, responsibility, structure, and commitment. Let's do this, and let's bring this piece together, brother.
I say, good speaking. Hey, brother, AC, you get the last word.
No, let the sister have the last word. I mean, let me say to the sister. Peace
yeah,
and
the
blessing.
Sister, the sister dropped off the line, and I couldn't get her back on. Couldn't get her back on real quick. I've been working on that.
To the brother Supreme, brother, continue to speak your mind. I understand what you're saying when you say devil. I mean, in all honesty, their actions would dictate that you call them nothing more. you know, nothing left. But the fact of the matter remains, if God is love, then obviously the devil is hate. And I hope you don't take the devil's persona into your heart. Understand who they are. Never practice their deeds, brother. Never practice their deeds. Don't hate. It's not going to resolve the issue. The issue has to be solved, but you can't solve this issue with a darkened heart. You have to let light continue to shine on your heart. To the brother Muhammad, peace and blessings to you always, brother. I mean, Islam has been an extremely important aspect of my life. At one point in time, I was one of the lights that shined from the Nation of Islam. I was an upstanding. I am an upstanding and outright, you know, upright, outstanding young man. You know, I was that. I am that. I'm older now. So, but I've always continued to practice that. You know, I speak truth because that way, you know, like they always say, it's more difficult to keep a lie because you have to continue to remember. I don't have to remember the truth. Truth is always with me. And that's how I come. And I appreciate what it is that the nation has to offer, which means I appreciate you. Okay.
Hey, let me give Brother Supreme a little bit more time because he also got a show. Brother Supreme, you still there?
Yes, brother. I mean,
and talk about your show and what's coming up. I think they'll might find it interesting. What you got going on?
Well, tomorrow, I'm going to be on a BS thing tomorrow. I mean, it's Carbon Radio. I'm basically replying to a brother who's been talking about me on his show. But on Saturday, I'm debating a Muslim about is the Quran, his name's called Aman Basir, and we're going to be debating is the Quran the word of God, and I'm going to tear him up historically. I'm going to go into Muhammad. I'm going to go into where they got this book from. So, you know, it's going to be very... I'm going to shed light on this book in the only way that I know how, you know. And like I said, I've done a lot of research on this book for years, trying to find out where this book comes from. So you're going to get... I'm going to be teaching the family about this book and why it needs to be put to rest. You know, this is the White Arab's book, bottom line. And on Sunday, we're going to be having an open discussion with the Muslims, with the Muslim brother. He's an Ahmadiyya Muslim as well. So,
okay,
yeah, that's going to be very interesting.
Can I put this info out, Brother Rob?
Yeah, because I thought about you too, brother. You need to go ahead and put that out there.
Yes, sir. Of course, my name is Brother Fakhan Muhammad. Representative of the Black Panther Party, that is the original Black Panther Party, Illinois chapter. We still have our elders of the party still in existence and doing their thing in the Ministry of Education, the continuance of that legacy of the Ministry of Education here in Chicago with the Black Panther Party. Also, I am a representative of the National Solidarity Committee, which is we put that together to be an umbrella of organizations to come together to solidify, to produce a body politic amongst themselves, structural component that would bring us together to put out in. And if I can give the national number, of course, 708.
Wait, brother. Do that again, because I might call you and you know, maybe you can be a special guest on my broadcast.
Yes, sir. Again, that's area code 708-473-2315.
Hey.
Yeah. You might have to hold
Muhammad.
That up. I can
your
number.
Brother Muhammad.
Yeah, let me say that one more. Don't press the button. It's going through the line there, brother.
Pen and paper, the old-fashioned way.
Well, what can I call you, though, brother?
Don't
what can
tap
I call
the button,
you?
Brother.
What
it's
can I call you again?
It's area code 708-473-2315. Again, that's 708-473-2315. And again, we are solidifying to build an umbrella. Of course, we are also aligned with the World African Diaspora.
Hey, can I hit them buttons, man? What's going on? Who's that?
Yeah, we got to chill with the buttons, brother. Again, as I was saying, we're also aligned here in Chicago to sit and work on our development in an alliance with the World African Diaspora Union, with Sister Cecile Johnson. And again, that's the acronym of WADU. And again, we're moving forward. So let's hook up. Let's build this continuity.
Yes.
And let's move forward, dear brother.
What can I call the sister, Cecil Johnson? Have you got a contact number or anything? You know, I would even mind having you as a special guest as well, sister.
Yeah, she dropped off real quick, man. I'll get you that information here.
Brother okay. Muhammad, one more time with that number, please.
Say that again, beloved.
One more time with that number.
Yes, sir. The number again is 708. The national number, 708-473-2315.
2315. Got you.
And you can email at NSC. That's National Solidarity Committee. So that's NSC_Uhuru, UHURU, at live.com.
At live.com?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you know
right,
that NSC is also, you know that NSC is also the National Security Council, but we won't talk.
Yeah, you know, we crack jokes about that. You know, there's so many acronyms to a lot of things.
Okay. Peace and blessings, brother.
All right, brothers. Thanks,
brother.
Highly peace.
Hope everybody enjoyed themselves and you learned a little something. You know, let's stick together here. And see you next time. I'll probably be doing another show on Saturday or Sunday night. So, AC, I'm glad to see you back, man. Love you. Brother Muhammad, I'm gonna see you. Should be seeing you on Saturday. And Brother Supreme, we're gonna stay in touch. Brother Kamento, I see you there. You didn't speak, so I'm gonna get you next time. I gotta run some stuff by you. All right, brothers.
All right, you're welcome.